And for those of you in the audience, you'll find a copy of the agenda at the rear of the room. For those of you that are listening to us by means of the internet or by Charter cable television, you can access a copy of the agenda by simply visiting the website at atascadero.org. And tonight marks the implementation of a return of the community forum to an earlier start time, and that will precede management reports. And to reiterate, we'll also be implementing the individual comment period from 5 minutes to 3 minutes. So with that said, we're honored tonight to have members of our local Boy Scouts. They'll be presenting our colors as well as leading us in the Pledge of Allegiance. So if you'll please stand as they introduce our colors. The issue of a resolution of support for naming State Highway 41. Could by a show of hands, could I see a number of people? If there's consensus, perhaps we can move this so that these folks can have an opportunity to address this earlier. And what I was thinking is perhaps we can move that just prior to the the community forum.
Yes, Mayor Brindler. I have received a formal request from Sam Blakesley, our assemblyman's office, bringing up that very point you mentioned, that folks would be here to speak on this item, and he also has requested that if we could consider moving this earlier on the agenda,
that'll be terrific. We'll put that after the consent calendar, and we'll be able to address it then.
Thank you.
And with that, I'd move approval of the agenda, the amended agenda.
Second.
We have a motion and a second.
Councilmember Luna?
Yes.
Councilmember O'Malley?
Yes.
Councilmember Clay?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Bureau?
Yes.
Mayor Brindler?
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
Thank you. And we have, to begin, we have a presentation by the Boy Scouts. A presentation on scouting's impact in the city of Atascadero. Again, thank you for presenting the colors tonight and leading us in the pledge, and we certainly welcome you.
Thank you very much. I'm Ingrid Olson, the district executive with the Del Norte District of the Los Padres Council, Boy Scouts of America, and we thank you so much, Mayor Brindler and the City Council, for having us here tonight. It's a very exciting time in the Boy Scouts. We're celebrating our 98th anniversary of Boy Scouts of America. 2010 will be our 100th anniversary. I know many of you here present tonight have been members of the Boy Scouts or have had family members in the Boy Scouts. Boy Scouts is a far-reaching organization, lots of community service projects, reaches many boys in their lives, and has made quite an impact on life in the United States. So we are very proud of the growth that we have here in the North County. The Los Padres Council covers all of San Luis Obispo and Santa Barbara counties. And the Del Norte District is the northernmost part of our council. And we have the most growth within the council. And so we're definitely leading the council, which is very exciting at this point. The council has 4,000 youth involved in scouting. And here in the Tascadero, there are 250 scouts, and that includes Boy Scouts, Cub Scouts, Ventures, and Explorers. Tonight, we have four units represented, Troop 101, Troop 226, Troop 155, and PAC 155, with one of our newest Cub Scouts. And so we have scouts ranging from brand new Tiger Cub up through Eagle Scout. We also have some very experienced scout volunteers, which I'm sure many of you know, such as Jay Deku. And so we're very excited. And tonight we have a scout, Eagle Scout, who's going to talk a little bit about scouting in Atascadero.
Hello. My name is Michael Peach, and I represent Boy Scout Troop 226. My troop and I would like to thank all of you for, you know, being the lead aid port. Because of your support, I was able to take what I learned in the Boy Scouts and apply it to my life, which led me to begin to start a business, which is doing very well. So I thank you guys all for your support and your efforts. Thank you.
I want to also mention that we are having a very exciting fundraiser coming up, and we especially thank Tom O'Malley and his wife for being the honorary chairs of the event and hosting it for us. We're having a fundraiser, wine and chocolate tasting, on May the 8th. And all of the funds that are raised at that event support scouting here locally in the North County. And we very much appreciate all of the support of the City Council and the residents of Atascadero. Without your support, participation, scouting wouldn't be what it is today. We really count on the volunteers and your support, and especially the around 125 adult volunteers that volunteer just in Atascadero. So scouting is definitely growing, and it's strong in Atascadero, and we really just thank you very much for all of your support. Thank you.
And thank you, Mrs. Olson. And very well put, Michael. You have a bright future, I can tell.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Tom?
I was just going to comment that I noticed a number of these young men have many more merit badges than I had when I was their age. And we do really appreciate all of the community service that the Boy Scouts have done. We have all been at many ribbon cuttings and other activities of projects that have benefited our entire community, and you are truly an organization that's involved in the community, and we all thank you.
Definitely. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Great.
All right, our next item, we have some employee service awards. Mr. McKinney.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and members of the council. I'm very excited to present some service awards. I have a 10-year service award tonight with Michelle Shambler. You can bring your partner. Thank you very much. Michelle and I started the same year with the city, and but she gets to take care of the dog, and I don't. Scott Pippen, Tom Gandy, and Jason Smith. Yes. Our 5-year awards, and I want to thank each of those guys. Tom Gandy also received the Distinguished Service Medal in September of 2007. So Tom, I'm going to present his later, and we're glad that he's gets to see this. Jason and Scott, come on, I saw you sneak in earlier, Scott. This is what the guy on the motorcycle looks like, not with the helmet.
Thank you, Wade, and thanks to our valuable employees. All right, we'll move on to our consent.
Mayor Pro Tem Barreau?
Yes.
Mayor Brenler?
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
All right, we'll now address item A6.
Mayor Brindler, thank you. I have requested item A6 to be pulled because I need to step down because, as you know, state law requires, since I own a piece of property within 500 feet of the item we are voting on, I need to actually leave the room for the vote. So I will do so and allow you to go ahead with business.
All right, thank you. All right, item A6 addresses final map 2008-0162, parcel map AT07-0074 at 5440 Traffic Way, which is related to Habitat for Humanity.
Move to approve.
We need to ask the public.
We need to hear the public. Is there anyone from the public that would like to address this particular item? Seeing none, I will return it to the council and entertain a motion.
Move to approve the item.
Second.
We have a motion by Mayor Pro Tem Barreau and a second by Councilmember Luna. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Clay?
Yes.
Councilmember Luna?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Barreau?
Yes.
Mayor Brindler?
Yes.
4-0, motion passes.
All right. Councilmember O'Malley will return shortly and we'll resume. All right, we'll now address the resolution of support. And Councilmember O'Malley, I believe you have some comments.
Well, actually, I think this is something that a number of our community have been involved with, a request to dedicate a portion of our local highway to Robert and Pat Nemo. And I think we all have a resolution in our agenda packets. This is something that a number of former mayors in our community have supported, and we have a request from Assemblyman Sam Blakesley in support of this. So I would be open to just passing this on to receive our community input and then consider this resolution proposed by Sam Blakesley.
Well, let's do that. There are people from the public that obviously wish to comment on this topic tonight. Welcome.
Mr. Mayor and Council, I'm Ray Johnson, 5405 La Uva Lane. Nine former mayors of the city have signed out a letter to Sam Blakesley requesting that a portion of 41 from El Camino East be named after Robert Nemo. And since then, the name Pat has been added to that. As you may know, he served on the city council from 1990 to 1994 as the mayor from 92 to 94. He also served as state assembly from 1973 to 1976 as a state senator from 1976 to 1980. He was appointed to serve with President Reagan's in Washington for President Reagan in 1981. He was served in the National Guard and was commanded there 200.
Nemo, Bob Nemo's wife. As you all know, she was a great community leader. She worked in real estate here for 40 years. She has done a lot for the community, and several of us women have written letters to Sam Blakesley's office. They requested us for her support. So we'd like to add Pat as well with Bob on that resolution. Thank you.
And thank you. Welcome, Mr. Wilkins.
Good evening. Bob Wilkins, 6405 El Camino Real. Good evening, Mayor Brindler and council members. I would urge you to support this resolution for Bob and Pat Nemo. They have been staunch supporters for this community for many, many years, having been involved in the ranching industry out in Carissa Plains, which is just next door to us, part of our school district. Bob served the country very well and honorably in the military and also in the state assembly. He's also was very good with connecting with his constituents and spending a lot of time in his district and talking to the people and doing things for the citizens of the district. I urge you to support this and thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else from the public that would like to speak? Seeing none, we'll return it to the council.
I have a
Councilmember Clay.
Yes, I really think it's appropriate to have Pat's name on there also because they were a true team. You know, if any two people worked together like that, they were an amazing team. So with that, if there's no further discussion.
Councilmember Luna.
Yeah, what wasn't mentioned is the role that Bob Nimmo actually played in the Highway 41 realignment, and I think it's entirely appropriate that the highway be named after him. He essentially guided this. The project was controversial for a long time, and he was, I think, the prime mover politically for getting it put in. And it was once called the Road to Nowhere, and I'm sure those people out in eastern San Luis Obispo County don't appreciate that, but they were. It was a controversial item, and I think that he did a fine job. I served with him for 2 years, from 92 to 94, and he was always a gentleman and treated me very fairly. So, but I think that this is very appropriate.
And I'll comment that I did not know the man, but it's quite clear hearing the comments tonight that this is a recognition that would be well deserved. And I believe
I'd like to make a motion, and I'd have to agree with George. He certainly was a gentleman, treated everybody with respect, and that was one of his strong suits. But I'd like to make a motion that we support the resolution naming the Highway 41 from 101 east to Creston Road after Bob and Pat Nimmo.
I'll second it.
Thank you, George.
We have a motion by Council Member Clay and a second by Councilmember O'Malley. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Clay.
Yes.
Councilmember O'Malley.
Yes.
Councilmember Luna.
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Barreau.
Yes.
Mayor Brendler.
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
Warren Fraze back in November. I said Warren at the August 28th City Council meeting at a public comment. Mr. Gerhardt suggested that a specific parcel he owns along Traffic Way that was dedicated a public park but not yet accepted by the city, have the park zone designation removed and that the subsequent sale price be donated to the Vets Memorial. And I was curious about that because that's that little park out there. There was Mr. Gerhardt owned it, a 5-acre parcel there, and it was subsequently subdivided into five parcels, and one of those was to be a park. And I went down and looked at the record and found that the assessor's office had not accepted the park because of a discrepancy on a title page. And on April 7th, 2006, the staff sent a letter to his to his engineer to find to the surveyor who had done the survey work, asking them to make a map correction. Well, nothing happened, and staff ended up dropping it, and then they had started working on it again. So my question is, you know, at what point is this issue going to be taken care of? And I know you have a lot of things on your agenda, but sometimes these things get dropped, and I believe that, you know, the city has a right to this park, and I don't want a clouded title on it. And then the other issue I have is something I discussed with Rochelle Rickard. That has to do with the $30,000 that was used to hire a historic consultant. It came from the redevelopment funds. And it was one of those things that was approved back in February of 2007. I brought this up a number of times because there didn't seem to be what I would call much sunshine on the issue. But Rochelle did say to me later that it needed to be brought to the council. And I know that she, too, has been very busy, but my question to her is, when will it be brought to the council for the appropriate action to be taken? Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else from the public that would like to speak? Are you here to speak, sir, during public comment?
I was here to open up in prayer, if that's all
maybe I'm right on time. I don't know. I'd like to thank you on behalf of the Tascadero Ministerial Association for reinstating this time. My name is Tom Gaddis, soon to be 33 years here in Atascadero as one of the community members. We pray, I just want you to know before I pray, that we as pastors pray for this city every week, every Wednesday. I don't know what they do in their private lives. I know in my life, I know in our church at Father's House. We pray not because our laws in the United States allow it. We pray because our hearts desire it and because you call for it. Father, I pray tonight that you would hear three things in this prayer. Hear thanksgiving. We thank you for these men and women who faithfully labor as our city council, for the city staff, for those who throughout the departments of the city make this city a great place to live. And second, Lord, I pray that you hear and answer this prayer, that you bless the labors of our council, of our staff, of all those who serve in this city. I pray that you give them wisdom, strength, favor for the task of guiding and governing this awesome community. Finally, Lord, I pray for your blessing and prosperity for the city, the community of Atascadero. We've been rocked recently, Lord, as you know, by the murders that occurred on Easter and in this last June. Little Natalia I'm thinking of. And I just somehow pray, Lord, that would you destroy the complacency and stir our compassion as a city, as a community of people, to be concerned equally to know our neighbors and to love our neighbors and maybe to be there on strategic times and places where we could just prevent such tragedy. And Lord, forgive us. I understand 72% of our whole nation doesn't even know who lives next door. Forgive us of that, Lord. And I pray a fresh stirring that we would be a community indeed. And so, Lord, thank you for tonight's proceedings. Would you just grace it with your hand and your wisdom upon all that's said and done? And I ask these things in the name of Jesus. Amen. Thank you.
Thank you, Pastor. Words of encouragement, always appreciated.
Is there anyone else from the public that would like to comment? Seeing none, I'll return to the council. Mr. Frace, are you able to address O'Keefe's issue about the park?
Yes, there was a recording problem on that. Staff's been working with the city attorney to get that resolved. We met with the county assessor last week. We've now agreed to a alternative resolution for the council to adopt that will clarify the intent of the wording on the final map and allow the assessor to convey that parcel to the city. We will have that on your next agenda.
Good. Housekeeping. I like it. Mr. McKinney, there was an issue. I don't see Rochelle, so she's not.
It'll be part of the redevelopment agency budget amendments, and both the agency and the city will be presented on May 13th.
All right, terrific. Thank you.
Mike, the lights aren't working, but that's okay. Just the word park, it's not a park. It's a piece of property right now with a lot of junk on it, and so it could be a park at some point. It's an area that was designated as
available tonight. If the council wanted to reschedule, they could do it and try to do it at another time. We've put some calls into them since we received that message to try to get some clarification. We have not been able to talk to them.
All right, but representatives of TIP Civic Solutions and ADE are here,
yes,
ready to present. All right, well, as a council, we have to make a decision of do we proceed?
Well, I would like to offer my input. One, I noticed that TIP Civic Economics is here from Texas. And I understand that the folks that couldn't make it were coming from Monterey in California. Is that correct?
We don't know where they are today, but that's where their company is located.
Okay. And I think out of respect for the folks that have come here all the way from Texas, I certainly hope we are going to go forward. This is certainly something we've talked about for a long time, and we've scheduled this. I would think that one of the first responsibilities of a consultant is showing up.
Are there other comments? Mayor Pro Tem Barreau?
I think we should proceed. I think dragging it out longer would be just more controversial.
And Mr. McKinney, was there some type of indication that they would be able to proceed perhaps at a future date?
Yeah. Let us just read you the email.
The email was sent today at 1 o'clock from Ms. Kendall Flint. She was the project manager for PMC. She said she's had a flight delay and won't make it in time. Please accept my sincere apology on behalf of PMC. If the council is willing to allow me to present at their next meeting, great. If not, we'll wait for the next opportunity. Sincerely, Kendall Flint, PMC.
But my problem with that is it becomes problematic if we allow the consulting firms to go tonight, and then it just, with our meetings broadcast, may give an unfair advantage to the other consulting firm if we were allowed them to present their case or present their ideas at the next meeting. So I tend to agree with Mayor Pro Tem Barreau that we should just proceed tonight with the two people who or the two firms that are here. Is that agreeable?
I would agree.
I'm okay with that, but I would like a question on the four that are listed on the on page 59, 1, 2, 3, and 4 is PMC is the fourth one. Which is the other one that didn't show up?
The other one that declined, that my recollection was Chabin?
That's
yes,
correct.
Chabin.
Chabin declined not to participate in this round.
Is that the second one? Or?
That's number 2 on the list. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so network.
And it is my strong recommendation that we I would like the city clerk to enter into the record the letter from Chabin declining to come this evening, much like we received input from the consulting firm that was not able to attend last minute. This firm took the liberty and foresight into responding to our request for extended hearings and took the time to write.
I believe the number was $110,000. We also had some money set aside for public forums and that sort of thing. We have not entered into agreement with any of the firms, so I believe we still have $110,000 available.
Okay. We didn't subtract out some of the costs of just listening and all those things.
I think that came out of the community outreach.
Okay. Okay. I just want us to all be clear because there's different numbers involved. Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Mayor, maybe before we proceed, it might be good to go ahead and enter in this in the record because we won't be considering Chabin as well as the folks that aren't coming and just get that out of the way.
That'll be fine. Does it have to be read into the record or is it sufficient just to simply?
I would prefer that it be read into the record. It's only a page and a half. And as I say, they took the time to write in their response anyway. I don't think it'll take very long.
There's no, I've seen it as well. There's no necessity to do that. I think this is overkill. I'd like to hear these folks have been sitting patiently, to get to that. And I'd like to hear Mr. Lewis do a brief.
Okay, I'll read it into the record later in the evening.
Well, I think it's appropriate to read it right now. Let's get it over with and let's get on with it.
I think take a second. Working towards consensus as we are trying to do on this, having a request from two council members, I'd appreciate if it was honored anyway.
Council direction, if you can.
Well, let's hear it.
That would be me. It's at the discretion of the council as to whether you want to have it read now, have it read later, or merely identify it by date and author and have it submitted into the record. So
It's your choice.
That would be my preference.
Well, I think transparency for the public. Let's hear it, okay? We're always talking about transparency. Let the public hear the letter.
Well, let's introduce it later after we've had the presentations. That would be, I think, the appropriate way to do it.
Well, okay. If I could just make a comment, I don't mind hearing the letter. I've read the letter, yeah. but we're not here to consider people who are no longer in the running for the position. It's the two people that have showed up that we should get the focus of our attention.
I agree, and I think since this company that's no longer in the running, that it was one of the four contenders and is recognized statewide as an expert in the field, have made specific suggestions to us to consider, and so I think it would be only fair to get that into the public. As you said, we've all read it. It's recommendations for us to consider in selecting a consultant, so I think it would be fair for the public to understand what we are factoring in when we make a consideration.
Well, if that's the case, then we should hear it beforehand so that the consultants can respond to it.
I agree. Yeah.
All right. Well, let's do this. Go ahead, read it into the record, yeah. And then we'll get to Mr. Lewis. I assume you have a brief report, and then we'll show the courtesy to our guests, some of whom have traveled quite far to be here tonight, and then hopefully tonight we can make a decision.
The letter is dated February 29, 2008, to Jim Lewis, Assistant City Manager. Reference longer period, but action plans need to be updated every 3 years. Second issue, the issue of Walmart is clouding the fundamental opportunities and effectiveness of a comprehensive economic development plan. Number three, the city has done a good job with their listening forums, but appears in the development of the economic development plan, this process is a continuation of a lot of public conversations of the issues which will continue to be focused around Walmart. Number four, the city already has some good reports and studies that could be acted upon for implementing the economic vision and stimulating the economy, particularly in this current down economy. Number five, the council has selected economic development as a priority, but there is not a clear definition from the council on what economic development means to them. Our philosophy focuses on the opportunities to create primary or base jobs, such as tech, office, manufacturing, processing, higher wage or value-added jobs. Enhancement to the character, image, and heart of a city, the core downtown business district, unique asset opportunities, and business climate. We are also all about implementation. How do you get the job done? If we are not on the same page with council, we may not be meeting the council or community's expectations. If we were to consider continuing in the selection process, we would ask, number one, given the opportunity in the general plan for the downtown and a study strategy for downtown revitalization already completed, why wouldn't the city's investment be focused on a good implementation of that effort to accomplish some tangible results in moving the initiative forward? Number two, would the council be open to a work session arranged through California Association of Local Economic Development, or CALED, to bring experts from throughout California representing communities of similar sizes and issues to review and discuss what this plan should address for them and where it should be focused? We appreciate the opportunity to have proposed on this project and to have become a finalist. We are active members of CALED, California Workforce Investment Board, and Team California. We are always available to discuss economic development with professionals and communities in California and welcome any calls or questions. We wish you success in the development of your plan. Respectfully, Audrey E. Taylor, President and CEO on behalf of the Chabon team.
All right. Mr. Lewis?
Thank you, Mayor Brennan and members of council. My report is very short. Invite each of the top four consultants that were listed as finalists from the committee who was selected to bring them back before you in the community to have a chance for you to discuss with them how their proposal would work, how their strategy would move forward, and what they could do for the city of Tascadero. And so we did invite the four firms, as you've heard, to have not come here this evening. You do have Applied Development Economics of Walnut Creek
and Civic Economics Tip Strategies, Boston, Texas. There are two firms. In fairness, to put the order in this evening, we asked the mayor to draw out of a cup the order of the firms. And that order was Civic Economics, PMC, and ADE. And so, of course, Civic Economics Tip would go first this evening, followed by ADE. As you look at the information in your staff report, these are from my staff report. The costs and the timelines that we discussed were from proposals submitted on
to continue. Questions for staff?
Council Member O'Malley.
Thank you. I think as the staff report says, item B1, we did consider this item, and staff did have a review process where they made a selection for one firm. It was voted on a 4-0 vote, and then at our next meeting it was reconsidered by a council majority to basically kick the tires of all of the applicants and hear from them directly. Is my understanding correct?
That was your direction?
And I wanted to clarify with the city attorney on a couple of points just to be clear. We did not follow our purchasing policy, which specifies specifically that staff set up a process for selecting a contractor. And I think the purpose of that policy is to keep the council at a policy level and keep staff functioning at implementing that policy. My understanding is we can, by our action as we took before, deviate from our policy, but that in no way sets a precedent that we've set aside our policy. Is that correct? Check with our city attorney.
The council has the authority to waive the requirements of the purchasing policy, which is basically what you've done here by making the motion to have the council interview the candidates.
Thank you. And my question was, is this does not set a precedent for deviating from our policy in the future. Is that correct?
It does not set a precedent. It can be handled on a case-by-case basis.
Thank you. And one concern I have that maybe council can speak to is, in addition to our policy, I know we got into some discussion before of actually beyond policy of selecting a consultant, we were actually getting into the procedures that a consultant might use. We were getting into some discussion about statistical measures and different forms of surveys. And I was concerned that that might be, again, going beyond the scope of a council. And is there any limit to the point that when we're interviewing a consultant to implement a policy for us that we refrain from getting into specifying for them or suggesting to them how they might do their jobs as professionals? Could you give us any guidance on that?
Well, the council has the legal authority to get into as much detail as you think you need to based upon the matter before you. Under the circumstances, since you're hiring the consultant and giving direction to the consultant as described in the request for proposal, ordinarily the consultant would then use their judgment to determine what the appropriate method is to accomplish the goals that are set forth in the request for proposal. On the other hand, if the council chose to provide further direction to the consultant, you would have the legal authority to do that.
So we can choose to micromanage as much as we decide. Is that correct? I just want to be sure I'm clear.
Well, the term micromanage is not the word I would use.
Sure. Our city manager and assistant city manager are folks' tasks with economic development for our city. Maybe they could offer some input since you had made this selection before. Is you have worked with economic studies in the past with other cities. Could you give us some direction if we're going to start giving direction to professional consultants on, as we had in our last meeting, some discussion about how to do surveys or what type of surveys might be better to accomplish what we think we want? Do you have any cautions or concerns, or should we just proceed with whatever thoughts we have?
Point of order, Mr. Mayor. This is not part of the discussion. Shouldn't be part of the discussion. We're here to pick a economic development strategy consultants.
And you're absolutely right. We're straying from...
From getting input from staff.
We're straying from what's appropriate. And this is a time to ask questions and...
That's my question for staff. Could they, since they've gone through this process, interviewing all four applicants, and this is going to be our first time at doing this, and they've interviewed many consultants in their careers, is there any guidance they could offer us in giving input to these consultants, or should we take their recommendations for us of how to proceed with implementing what we see as our policy?
I think the consultants you're going to see tonight are very professional. These are the top of the market that perform this kind of work, and I think that they have very good opinions as to what kinds of things are successful. You know your community best, and so I think that there is a blend between the kinds of things, kind of ideas and suggestions that you can offer the consultants of what you think or feel may work in a Atascadero, and they have tried many, many, many things. They're going to have some very good ideas and issues in their presentations tonight, and I believe that you can easily blend those to get an economic development strategy that you want.
Councilmember Clay.
Just to clear up a few things, the committee wasn't a staff committee. Is that not right, Jim? The committee was not a staff committee. It was a combination of...
Well, the committee was a staff committee in the sense that there were not elected officials on it. There was a staff person from San Luis Obispo, a staff person from a regional economic organization, and two staff members from the city.
Okay. And for the record, there was 10 companies originally that applicants. Is that not true?
There was 11 proposals.
11. Okay, 11. And then the committee boiled it down to four, right?
That's correct.
And if I'm not mistaken, you felt that all four were qualified and would do a good job.
That's yes, they had different nuances in how they approached the work, but we believe that all four would do a great job for you.
Right. And the only question I have is on the 43,000 and the difference. It was one applicant that started out with a 14-month or something like that, 43,000, and then their second proposal was for 109 or something like that in a 22-month. Could you explain that a little bit?
Yes, that was PMC, so they're not here this evening, but their original proposal...
We did not adopt staff's recommendation was around the time frame for implementing this study, and I understand we have two applicants before us tonight, and as I recollect, ADE had a time frame they believed they could be completed in October. Do you know the total number of months that ADE was suggesting that they needed to do their study, one of the applicants before us tonight?
I think that's a question for them. I think they'll give that presentation, and you can ask them that.
Okay, but you did review all four applicants and made a recommendation. Do you recollect the time frame from the four applicants?
I recollect the original time frame was close to 9 months. In discussion with you that evening when they made their presentation, they said that could be 6 months as they had looked at our community more. But I think that's a moving target. I think that they've crafted timelines and proposals that they think would work best for our community. But as the city manager said, it's really up to best practices of theirs and what our community needs.
Thank you. I think you answered the first half of my question. ADE originally proposed they could do a study in 9 months and then proposed that maybe they could do the parts. They could do it in phases and get some of the information to us sooner.
I believe they said that, but they could clarify
sure,
that
we'll
for
get
you.
That clarified.
I think
and
that...
The other half of my question, again, because timelines was important to our consideration, we also have ADE is the, I'm sorry, TIP, Civic Economics from Texas is the other organization here. I believe in their original proposal, did they say they could, they would if they started November 7, they'd have it completed by April 30th, so they could do the study in 6 months, was their original proposal?
That is what the proposal was for, yes.
Okay, so we'll see where they are tonight then. So ADE that we wanted to reconsider was 9 months originally, and the other applicant said they could do it in 6 months. correct?
Yes.
Thank you.
I think these questions have been asked and answered, and I think Mr. Lewis makes a very valid point in saying that these people are here. They're ready to answer our questions, and I think these type of questions should be directed at them.
I agree.
Mayor Pro Tem Bayrou.
I just want to remind us that the reason we reconsidered it is because we wanted both for the finalists to present to the public so the public could hear it themselves as well as us. So with that, I'd like to continue.
That point is well taken. I have one question for Mr. Lewis, and I'm not so certain you can answer this because you probably have to know what's in the mind of the author, but it does relate to the letter that was read into the record. And on point number five, it says the council has selected economic development as a priority, but there is not a clear definition from the council on what economic development means to them. I was never contacted by any representative of this group to ask what economic development means to me. Were other members of council asked? Because I find this statement, it's a little difficult for me to understand where they're coming from.
Not to my knowledge, you were not asked from any of the consultants. That statement surprised me a bit as well, because if you recall, in June we had a discussion of what economic development is. That was at your direction, and we talked about economic development as several things: retail, industrial development, downtown growth, tourism, balanced jobs and work. So we did have that discussion in just June, and that's where you directed us to start this process. So
starting, I had our PowerPoint presentation on a thumb drive that I was loading into the laptop, and there was an issue regarding not having the password to turn on.
We have a member of our technology team here to help you out.
Before we get started, while we're waiting here,
could you just speak in the mic?
Sure. Yeah. I just wanted to provide brief introductions. My name is Alan Cox. I'm with TIP Strategies. We're working with Dan Houston and Civic Economics, also of Austin, Texas. And I'd like to, from our experience in a lot of communities, the leaders of the communities, especially in those that are of this size, wear lots of different hats. And obviously right now you're wearing your civic leader hat. And I was just curious if you'd be willing to let us know what do you do in your day job?
Retired mathematics professor.
A dietitian. I work at the state hospital.
A retired police officer.
Public and private sector management experience. Retired as administrator from County Mental Health Department. Undergraduate degree in economics. I always have economics questions for
you. All right.
How much time do you have? I'm retired from
45 minutes,
about everything. Okay.
Thank you.
I do nothing. You know, while they're trying to bring up that on, wouldn't it be a good idea for a break? Because this is going to be a, 45
minutes.
That is
an excellent idea. Yeah, is the council think that's appropriate? Yeah. And hopefully we'll have the technology worked out.
That'd be wonderful.
We'll take a 10-minute break. Be back at a quarter till. Got the bugs worked out, do we?
I believe we do. I believe we do.
Oh, boy.
All right. Well, again, my name is Alan Cox with TIP Strategies, and this is Dan Houston with Civic Economics. We're partnering on this project. I would, before we get started, like to express my appreciation for this opportunity to speak directly with the council regarding this really important plan. This is the agenda that we're going to be talking about in our presentation. First, we're going to tell you a little bit about TIP and Civic Economics as firms. We're going to talk about some of the national trends that we've seen in our experience working across the country. And then also sort of highlight a few case studies from other communities that we've worked in recently. Then I'd like to go into a little bit of detail regarding our approach specifically for Atascadero, and then open it up to discussion. If I'm remembering correctly, we have 45 minutes is the maximum presentation time, and then Q&A after that?
That's what we'd like you to shoot for, yes.
Okay, wonderful. Appreciate it.
Could you Please talk into the microphone. I mean, I'm just saying.
Beg your pardon. Well, TIP Strategies, we are an economic development consulting firm. We are based in Austin, Texas, and please don't hold the Texas part against us. Our core strength, we do staff. Tom Stellman is president and CEO of TIP Strategies. He is the former director of the Office for International Business for the state of Texas, and he founded when there was an administration change in the early 90s in the state of Texas. He left the state and started up TIP Strategies in 1995. John Roberts is our managing partner and COO, and he will be working on this project if the council in its wisdom decides to choose TIP Strategy Civic Economics team. He will be leading this project, and unfortunately he's unable to make it here tonight, and so I will be presenting for him. But in any case, John Roberts is the former director of business development for both the states of Washington and Texas. So in other words, he was head of economic development for the state agencies of economic development in both states in the early 90s. Also, in his past experience, he was a personal advisor to the governor's offices in Oregon, Washington, and Texas on economic development and trade issues, and he joined TIP in 2000. Again, TIP Strategies, you're probably wondering what the TIP stands for. It stands for Theory into Practice, just if you're curious about that. We do have national experience working across the country. Probably about 40% of our work is in the state of Texas. That's where we live. So it's very convenient for us to serve that market. But at the same time, we work from coast to coast. Personally, I've worked in projects spanning from Florida to the state of Washington, up to Illinois, down to Louisiana, Mississippi, and Texas, of course. Some of the projects that we've worked on just recently on the West Coast, Watsonville, California, Gresham, Oregon, Puyallup, Washington, Kirkland, Washington, Blaine County, Idaho is a project we're currently working on. That's Sun Valley in Idaho. We've also done extensive work throughout the Midwest, throughout the South, and, of course, in Texas. In terms of other types of clients we've had, primarily we work with cities, counties, economic development organizations that maybe are public-private corporations. But also, at the same time, we have had states and regions as clients. State of Texas, we wrote the economic development plan for in the late 90s. State of Vermont, we have recently conducted a plan for them for talent recruitment strategies. Chicago-Milwaukee corridor. What happened here? We've also just completed work with the Delta Regional Authority. It's a federal agency that covers 8 states along the Mississippi River from New Orleans up to St. Louis. Currently, we're working in a 26-county region in Louisville, which includes both the states of Kentucky and southern Indiana. International clients have included London, the Netherlands, Northern Ireland, and Austria. Civic economics, I'll let Dan Houston, who represents them, do
his commercial. My song and dance. Yes. Civic economics is we really have gained some notoriety for is analysis of regional retail and service provision. So how does money move within a given market? And that's what we're going to be looking at as our primary work here is, you know, it's quite clear to anybody who's picked up an Atascadero newspaper or Googled the word Atascadero that retail issues are very high on the agenda here. And, you know, even way back in the summer of 07 when y'all started talking about economic development and what the needs are and what the opportunities are here, that retail plays a major role in that and downtown plays a major role in that. So we're going to be looking at that retail and commercial development aspect of economic development at Civic Economics. And I think we've given you one example of a project in Gunnison. And by the way, their city council is, I hope, voting right now to give us a contract to update that study. So, and Gunnison is a good example of kind of what we're talking about doing here, which is a lot of public engagement around the issue, because as y'all have learned, there's nothing more contentious than the W word, and a community can get pretty fired up pretty fast. And what we like to do, and I think what we've had great success in doing, is putting numbers to this instead of emotions. And let's just work through the reality of a community's needs and a community's economy. And then it tends to very much calm the discussion and allow us to then work toward the broader, really more focused economic development strategies that TIP is here to talk about. We're going to do bits and pieces of all of this here in this project. We're going to look at the retail trade area for this whole region. You know, we just kind of loosely pulled some numbers about how your sales tax performance is relative to the other communities around here. We made a point of going around walking the streets of San Luis this afternoon to see that really a boomtown of a downtown down there. And that's obviously another retail trade area that you compete with. And Paso Robles, is how you like to say it, to the north. So we'll really take those communities and any others that are sort of around here and analyze where people are doing their retail activity and what opportunities exist based on your properties here. You know, we rode out to see the annex site today. And then we'll work on strategies for once we know where we're talking about and what the opportunities look like in this region for you to capitalize on some on opportunities, whether it's keeping people from shopping in other cities from here or whether it's to capture tourists from elsewhere, you know, folks staying at the hotel, whatever. We'll work on strategies with y'all to develop how to grow that piece of your economy. Because, of course, in California communities, you've kind of led the nation in very tight municipal finance, something of a crisis, really. And sales tax is the one that you can really put your finger on and make a difference. So we want to help with that. And that's what civic economics will be here for the most part. Oh, I think you've seen all of our materials for the most part. Civic economics, we've recently done a couple studies out here in this region. We did a study in San Francisco that had got a lot of play in the news, and I don't know if it's changing policy at this point yet. It was discussing the fact that San Francisco is a city with an extraordinarily lively and healthy independent business climate, business sector. So small independent restaurants and retailers hold enormous market shares in that city relative to a normal American town. And nobody calls San Francisco normal. And then we looked at how much more effective that is.
Right. We're talking about some national trends that we've come across over the last few years whenever we worked across the country. Really, what's interesting is the evolution of economic development, the definition of it, and what are the goals of economic development, how that's evolved over time since the 1970s. You know, in the 1970s, if you said you were into selling buildings or developing buildings, you know, you could raise your hand and say, I'm in economic development. But then in the 1980s, the catchword in economic development was really, we need more jobs. And then in the 90s, the discussion sort of changed a little bit, especially in the early 90s, saying, you know, we need higher wage jobs. It's not just sufficient to have more jobs, period. But then, you know, around 2000, it's all about the information age. We need knowledge jobs. And what we're seeing is that more and more across the country, that the worlds of community development and economic development have really started to meld. And that is really what we're seeing as economic development today. And so really what it's about is talent and quality of place, or what we like to call quality of place, sort of melding the idea of sense of place and quality of life, which is a whole other discussion right now. But it's really interesting to see how economic development is going. And, you know, some of the things that are driving this, and these are, you know, it's readily available numbers here, it's just looking at manufacturing versus services. Of course, whenever we do work in states like Mississippi or Arkansas or Tennessee or some other places where they're really interested about manufacturing and they believe that manufacturing is economic development, we love to show this slide. Because really in the United States, if you count your success as manufacturing jobs, you're really swimming upstream. What you see here is the blue line is the gross number of manufacturing jobs in the United States from 1970 through 2005. So in 1970, we had 17.8 million manufacturing jobs nationally. What's interesting to me is all the way through 2000, that that line there is pretty flat, even through the really severe recession of the early 80s when we thought we were losing all of our manufacturing jobs, and Japan was, you know, that was where it was at with manufacturing then. But you see that it's been really pretty flat until very recently, over the last 5 years, when you really see a significant dip in that line there. So in the last 4 or 5 years, manufacturing jobs have actually decreased by 3 or 4 million for the, really the first time in modern history. But while at the same time, you see that services has really taken off. So when I was born in 1971, you know, those two lines were pretty much the same, services, manufacturing. And, you know, what is services? That's a big question. But you see 20 million to 58 million. So this trend line here is very clear. If you are interested about job growth in Atascadero, you know, it's going to be very difficult to convince a low-cost manufacturer or a manufacturing firm to come to a community such as Atascadero. What is interesting, though, is to see what we're still doing with manufacturing. You know, what you see here is in front of you is becoming from. Where is employment growth going to come from? This is Moody's economy.com. They're a very well established national economic forecasting firm. These are their numbers. Over the next 10 years, they forecast that these are the sectors that are going to be producing the most jobs nationally. Healthcare, social assistance, 30% growth over the next 10 years. How we're going to pay for that nationally, I have no idea, but this is where the trend is leading. Obviously, we have an aging population nationally, and so that's probably what's driving a whole lot of this. Administrative support services, which is typically a lot of back office, tech support type of jobs. Accommodation food services, that's your hotels, restaurants, et cetera. And then professional, scientific, technical service positions or employment sector, that's going to increase employment by roughly 26%, give or take. And then arts, entertainment, recreation. So really the vast bulk of all jobs in the United States are going to be coming from these five sectors. And you'll notice here at the very bottom in gray, manufacturing is still forecast to continue to lose employment. For me, from my standpoint, and when I think about Atascadero, you actually are very well situated, I think, from the little I know of your local economy and your community, to really be pretty well positioned for employment growth or taking advantage of these national employment trends here. You've got a healthcare base here. You've got a great quality of life that can help attract some of the talent that's going to be needed here. So really, to sort of sum it up with the job growth, 28% of all jobs in the United States over the next 10 years are expected to come from health services. Professional business services is expected to provide another quarter of the nation's jobs, and then leisure and hospitality, another 18%. So really, two-thirds of all new jobs in this country are expected to come from those three sectors alone. Everything else is just one-third. Another thing that's really interesting is what's going on, and it's in all the papers now, but when we first started talking about this about 3 or 4 years ago, it was really striking to a lot of people, but I still believe that it has a lot of relevance. What you see here, and I apologize for maybe the size of the text, and I'll explain what that means. The orange line that you see there is the national average employment growth since 1990. Roughly, the nation has averaged roughly 1.5 million new jobs per year in the United States. Of course, there are cycles of going up and down. You know, there's recessions and there's booms and so forth. But on average, about 1.5 million new jobs nationally each year. What you see there with the blue bars is based on what we know about the nation's demographic composition, is that the blue bars represent the net annual change in the working age population in the U.S. In other words, those who are about 18 to 64 before retirement age. So, if the national economy demands the creation of 1.5 million jobs annually. We're going to solve this crisis. I'm sure there's going to be lots of things. I mean that the nation's going to have to grapple with. But what it boils down to is we're going to be facing some serious labor force shortages. So what that tells me is that we really need to focus. If you're really serious about economic development and you're interested in creating a more economically vital and vibrant community, that you really have to focus on a lot of the sort of the place assets that are going to attract the workers, that are going to be making the local employers competitive and successful in an environment that, you know, it's hard for me to believe, because whenever I graduated from college, it was in the recession in the early 90s, and it was tough to find a job. But still in Austin today, we're still doing pretty well. But a lot of people are just moving to a lot of places that they just want to move there. And they assume that they will be able to find a job. But why are they moving to certain places? Because a perception of sort of the sense of place, quality of life, it's a really cool town, it has a great nightlife and so forth. And so it's that young talent base, that young demographic that a lot of employers are starting to figure out that, you know, that in the past they'll do all these sorts of labor studies and so forth, but now they're really understanding that if they locate in certain places, they will be able to find the talent that they need to be successful and competitive in this global environment. One good example is BP. Tom Stelman, the president of our firm, he and I, part of our process is to go out and interview major employers whenever we're working in a community. There's a suburb on the west end of Houston called Katy, Texas. And we were working for their economic development organization, and the Katy Freeway, I don't know if you know anything about Houston, but the Katy Freeway runs from downtown out west to the suburb. And it's lined with lots of office buildings, and it's considered sort of the energy corridor of Houston, where a lot of the national and international oil companies have their North American or global headquarters are located along there. And so BP, they have their North American headquarters located on the Katy Freeway, and they were considered part of sort of the service region of the Economic Development Agency. So Tom and I, we sat down with the chief operations officer there at BP America, and we asked him, you know, our interview processes with employers are typically pretty open-ended and very conversational. We asked him, well, what's your biggest headache right now? And the guy said, well, you know, that my biggest challenge is finding the talent that I need right now. And Tom, his response was, well, how can that be? You're an oil company and you're based in Houston, Texas, which has easily the largest concentration of oil engineers, petroleum engineers in the country. How can you have trouble finding, you know, skilled employees here? And he said, well, offend you, but Houston's a hard place to sell to a lot of those really skilled, talented people. We're not just competing against other oil companies in Houston. We're competing with software companies in the Bay Area. We're competing with Wall Street in New York. We're competing with the financial district in London, trying to bring that level of talent to Houston. And the reason I'm engaged in this economic development process is I would like to shift what we consider economic development in the Katy area to one that really favors more the employees. One of his agendas was he wanted, I don't know if you know this, but Houston has started a light rail system. And what he was trying to push for was a light rail line to come up and down that corridor and really try to promote mixed-use development, transit-oriented development along the light rail line. And I thought that was just fantastic. So I just wanted to share that story for you because it really reinforces this notion. The smart employers already know this. It's the communities that are now starting to understand what that means for economic development. And employers are facing lots of challenges right now in the United States. Not only are there typical up and down cycles and other sorts of pressures with the competition that they're facing locally, you know, they have all kinds of customer and market pressures. But also at the same time now, you know, U.S. employers are bumping up against global competition, and they have a choice to make at that point. They can either be a value-driven company or they can be a commodity-driven company. And if you're a value-driven company, that means that you are really striving for customer service, you're striving for excellence in the delivery of your product, and that means having skilled, talented workers. And what that means for the community is that they need, if they want those types of companies, they need to stress talent, workforce development, and it goes beyond just your standard old workforce development rules, but also needing to focus really on quality of place. Now, the other response for an employer is to be commodity driven, which means that you have to really lower costs and lower your cost of raw materials. Now, quite frankly, given what I know of Atascadero, that it's going to be really difficult for this community to really compete on a low cost sort of basis, that what you're going to have to really strive to do if you're really interested in economic vitality and true economic development is fostering these other things and not trying to go after the low cost. And maybe I'm preaching to the choir here and you already know this, but I just wanted to stress it because it's very important. One last slide here that I wanted to share with you is this quote from Carly Fiorina, the former CEO of Hewlett-Packard. She says, "Keep your tax incentives and your highway intersections. We will go where the highly skilled people are." So really, economic development is really all about people development. It's all about attracting people and retaining your people. I know that there was some discussion a little bit earlier about, you know, what is the city same size as you all, about 25,000, between 25 and 30,000. It's located in south central Arkansas, really fairly isolated community. And they hired us to do an economic development strategic plan for them in response. They have an oil economy there, but the oil fields have kind of dried up. And they have a major employer. It's Murphy Oil Company. It's actually quite fascinating. It's a Fortune 500 company still located in a small town of 25,000 people in really the backwoods of south central Arkansas, quite honestly. But so anyway, they have a struggling economy, and their economic development organization wanted to partner with the city, and there in the state of Arkansas, you can pass a sales tax to support economic development. They had tried that and had failed, and so then they decided to come back and say, well, what we need to do then is therefore have a good solid plan, sell that to the community, and then get support. And I'm happy to say that after having provided them with a plan, they went back to the community and got two-thirds popular vote to support a sales tax. And the result is that they have $32 million now over the next 8 years for economic development because of that. They have a sunset law, so it's over the next 8 years they have to go back to the community to do that. But really what the plan really focused on was talent attraction marketing. They actually have some interesting tourism sorts of prospects there, as well as some retiree prospects. They actually had a very vibrant downtown. A lot of that was money that had been provided from the oil company because they had already understood the talent need. And if they were going to be operating their global headquarters of a Fortune 500 company in the backwoods of Arkansas, that they really needed to have something to show to people that they're going to be hiring there. So they actually had an entertainment sort of area loosely defined, and we've provided them with a pretty solid plan for developing that entertainment district more. And then there were some other suggestions and recommendations regarding setting up an entrepreneurship center that goes beyond just sort of a small business development center, also helping them have a conference center there and some corridor beautification that they needed to, and also some linkages of their economic development efforts to regional higher education. They don't have a university there, but just 30 miles down the road they do in Ruston, Louisiana, which is Louisiana Tech. And they had some interesting sort of linkages there, that some programs in their engineering school that maybe could be applied to existing employers, and some entrepreneurship strategies to be built off that. But really, for me, the most exciting thing that came out of this whole thing was there had been some talk in the community of, I'm not sure if you've ever heard of the Kalamazoo Promise. In Michigan, it happened maybe a couple years ago, but there had been some talk in the community that they had been losing lots of individuals and families. They were leaving the community, disinvesting from El Dorado. And someone got the idea that maybe we can sort of copy what the Kalamazoo Promise is. And what the Kalamazoo Promise was sort of he announced that Murphy Oil in and of itself would provide a $50 million scholarship, making that same promise to any high school graduate in El Dorado. And it wasn't just for any university in Arkansas, but a free ride to any university, public or private, in the United States. So it was really pretty phenomenal. And we've kept in touch with their chamber and economic development people. And within the last 12 months, they've seen a huge turnaround in people moving to El Dorado just for that sole purpose of getting their kids a free ride college education. So that is one of my proudest moments in economic development. This is a project, Lake County, Florida. It's a county of about 300,000 people just to the west of Orlando. It's been booming, just going crazy in terms of the development. And they were really dealing with a lot of land use issues, land management. They have been working on their comprehensive plan for the last 5 years and haven't been able to pass it at the county level. Their board of county commissioners have not been able to pass that plan. And we came in. They had hired us to do an economic development plan for this county, which was really very large and disparate. They had lots of environmental concerns, and it's 14 municipalities scattered throughout this county. And so we provided them with a pretty good plan, I think. And the Board of County Commissioners, about 3 or 4 weeks ago, passed it unanimously at the end result, and that's going to be feeding into their land use management plan. Puyallup, Washington is another project I worked on about 3 or 4 years ago. What we provided with them was a plan for retail diversification, redevelopment around a light rail station, and they also had an outdated semiconductor plant located in their community, and we took a look at that and helped provide them with a marketing plan for going out and trying to get some private investment for that, and they've succeeded in the last 6 months in getting someone to come in and use that clean room space. State of Vermont, this is not a project I worked on, but since I have been talking about talent a great deal, I wanted to talk about this one. It's pretty interesting. They recognized that their biggest challenge was losing all their best and brightest. There's not a major university in the state of Vermont, and so a great deal of their kids, they leave the state to go to either Boston or New York or somewhere else, some other state, to go off to college. And once you lose them, it's very, very hard to get them back. And so what we worked with Next Generation Consulting. It's a consulting firm that helps companies attract talent, especially young talent. They understand the generational issues and what the needs are of the various generations very, very well. And so we came back to them with a marketing plan to help them try to bring back some of those college kids. Our approach on this project and all of our projects, as a matter of fact, is really focusing on economic vitality as really, you know, the core of what we're talking about with economic development. We very much favor an open versus closed process. We look for organic opportunities that already exist, latent opportunities that exist within the community. We're not looking at requirements that need to be looked at, land, buildings. We crunch the numbers in terms of the economic and demographic assessment to really try to uncover what are the core issues here. We do benchmarking to try to find other communities that are facing some of the same kind of issues. And, you know, we don't restrict it to just your neighbors, but really national benchmarks, both from the communities that we've already worked in or from other communities that we've heard about whenever we go off to, like, Vermont or Illinois or something. And we, you know, we really try to retain that knowledge. Opportunity is our next phase, and that's where, you know, once we've gotten the public input, we've crunched all the numbers, we really try to understand what the community's vision is for itself. In other words, what does Atascadero want to be when it grows up? And then we come back with those opportunities that we think are a good fit for the community's vision and then start building the consensus around that. And so trying to then therefore move it forward and by providing strategies and what are the key priority projects that need to be done in order to achieve that vision. And, of course, obviously you always have to follow up a strategic plan with a good, strong implementation plan with specific actions that are recommended. What are the resources that are needed? Not just financial resources, but who are the champions that maybe can drive it from maybe a private sector standpoint? Who are the responsible parties? What are the milestones, the budgets, the metrics, and what is the process? And this last one I think is very important. What is the process to use for future planning beyond this? Our approach to public input, to tell you quite honestly, we modify on a case-by-case basis because every single community we work in is unique. You know, in some communities, the process, you only need to do some interviews with certain individuals and you'll understand what needs to occur. In other communities, you can have town hall meetings. You can, and we've done all these things, town hall meetings. You can set up surveys on websites. You can do paper surveys. We've worked with a firm in New Jersey which specializes in calling up people and asking them in the community, you know, doing surveys over the phone, which nowadays is really, quite honestly, not very effective anymore because not many people actually answer their phones because everybody has caller ID now, and if you don't recognize it, then you're not going to answer. But also, we like to build in a planning feedback loop for what do you do with that public input. And what I mean by that is, you know, what we have here is this is how we conceptualize public input. We call it our stakeholder pyramid. And it's really kind of a bottom-up process and really kind of refining who you're talking to. Really, the first step is what we consider education outreach. It's a very important step. It's really trying to raise awareness of what are you trying to accomplish. In this case, it would be an economic development plan. And really trying to generate buzz about that, you know, having a good media relations strategy, and really getting in front of individuals and organizations and other networks that can spread the mind that input. Okay, so we've heard from the general public, and now who do we need to go to really understand this issue a little bit more? So, for example, and I don't know if this is applicable at all or not, but if, for example, we hear that there's a big problem with the public schools in Atascadero, and it's really affecting our ability to be a great community. So at that point, we know, okay, maybe public education is something we need to understand. We know at that point, so then therefore we need to go to those who know internally what's going on. So it'd be the superintendent of the public schools or whatever title the head of the schools would be, or the CFO of the public schools, you know, really understanding what the issue is. And again, I'm just making that up. I have no idea if there's a public school issue at all here or not. And once we've gathered up all of that public input, we've talked to the quote-unquote experts who know the issues more intimately, we'll go back and we'll start working on the plan. And then the last step, I think, is really critical to the implementation piece. That's action. And that's really identifying who are the champions, the standard bearers who can push the projects forward or the planning, the plan forward. You know, the city of Atascadero can write a plan and can accomplish a great deal on its own. But there are myriad other organizations throughout this community and this county that can help push some other things forward, such as maybe the Main Street Group or the Chamber of Commerce or the Redevelopment Agency, which I guess is part of this, or maybe even the county itself. So there's lots of people that need to be involved in the implementation of the plan. It's not just the quote-unquote city of Atascadero's plan. It's the city of Atascadero's plan, if you know what I mean. This is – I don't know if this is what you would be interested in, but we're trying this out. It's Limehouse Software. It's a company out of Miami, and they've created a planning process software model where you can actually go in, and we're willing to do this in this process if you feel like it's needed. But what they do is they provide a portal for a plan where you can post documents in draft form and invite the community to come in and comment on the working document. Or if you wanted to, you could limit it to a certain number of individuals, whether it's maybe a steering committee or the city council itself or the staff or whomever can go in and watch this, the planning process and the drafting of the document itself. So this is one thing that you could consider. Yes, sir.
Okay, it's we've arrived at 45 minutes,
okay.
So I'm hoping that you can wrap up here.
Yeah, sure. So the plan that we propose, it's what you have in the paper. These are the deliverables. And we will provide you with an economic assessment. Dan will do a retail trade area determination demographics. We'll do benchmarking, public input, opportunities and strategies. And what we believe as most appropriate is a 3 to 5 year implementation plan that should be.
You'll field some questions from the council.
Sure.
Assuming there's going to be some. And then we'll open it up. After that, we'll open it up to public comment. And if the public asks some questions, perhaps you'll be able to respond.
Be happy to.
And so let's start with Mayor Pro Tem Bayrou. You have a question?
As we were launching into revising our strategy and deciding to have a consultant help us with that process, mm-hmm. One of the facts that was brought up is that we have had, you know, periodic assessments of our community, like a Buxton report and various ones that, you know, from my standpoint as being one of the newer ones on the council, why those haven't, you know, hit the ground running and made a difference in our community. And will you address, you know, our past efforts and focus all those into one plan?
Most definitely. That's one of the very first things we do whenever we start a planning process is to, you know, contact the client and understand what are all the relevant studies that have been done, and we ask for copies of those at the very beginning of the process before we even start trying to pull any of the data ourselves. Because, you know, you can pull data all day long and reinvent the wheel, so to speak, and try to rediscover things. But if someone else has already seen something, we'd much rather cut to the chase and understand what those issues are that have been raised in other plans. And lots of people have really great ideas, and we don't claim to have all the best ideas in the world. You know, I think the best consultants are the ones that steal somebody else's ideas but can help put them all together into something that can be implemented.
Okay, thank you.
Councilmember Luna?
Just to follow up on that, this started as an update to our economic development strategy, mm-hmm. which is supposed to be updated every 5 years. I think this is the sixth year. But we thought we'd get some real professional help, and that's why you're here. Some of the charts you put up, you know, there was this false start a couple of weeks ago, and Councilmember O'Malley talked about that. But it does give us some advantage because some things have changed. I know in your chart, some of your charts, the base year was 2006, and a couple of things have changed. I think there's the realization, I mean, even somebody told Alan Greenspan that, yes, we are in recession. And the second thing is, and he admits it, now. The second thing is that the meeting after that false start, the council decided to go forward with the Walmart application. So things have changed since your original application. And so could you address how both the recession and the Walmart application will affect what you're going to do? Mm-hmm. Will it augment? Will it supplement? Will it be an independent report? Exactly how will it fit in with what we're doing with Walmart, for example?
For our retail specialists, I'll let him address any Walmart issues, but I'll be happy to address the recession.
And really in a much more nuanced sort of a way than a Buxton kind of a report would do, is really where do you fit into the regional economy for retail and service provision? You know, what can this town do? You know, and looking at a fairly limited amount of really buildable, good, big sites in this community, what do you want to do? What's going to make the best use of your space in this community that's commercial and that doesn't have, you know, immediate obstacles to it? And where can you fit in competition? Because really it is a competition on a regional basis up and down this big freeway. So that's really what the retail portion of this study is going to look at. It's funny because since this whole process started, when we first sat down with TIP and TIP and went through the discussion of what to do in this project and, you know, whether Civic Economics even wanted or needed to be involved in it, it was clear looking at Atascadero and what's going on here is that, you know, retail really is a big part of the discussion you're having, you know. And again, Jim Lewis's presentation way back in last summer, a lot of economic development discussion was about commercial sites. And so we want to make sure that gets incorporated into it. At the same time, I think Civic Economics' role in this is to make sure that that retail thing doesn't bury every other issue. You know, the Chabon letter brought up the issue that, you know, Walmart threatens to swallow everything else in the economic development planning process. And what we really want to do is take it and make retail, big picture retail issues and commercial development issues a part of a harmonious, holistic economic development plan. And I, you know, I think that's what Civic Economics brings to the table, is that we've had great success in the past at sort of calming that debate, you know, for or against Walmart. You know, at the end of the day, hopefully we'll give you a report that advocates on both sides think sucks, you know.
Regarding your questions about the recession, yes, it does look like we are in the recession nationally, it does look like it, definitely, especially along the coastal areas. Y'all know better than I that you've been hit very hard by the housing issue, the foreclosures and so forth. And you know, how that's going to affect an economic development plan, I don't think that it affects at all our overall framework for understanding what are the key components to economic development. It is still about innovating and moving forward and becoming more competitive and more efficient. It's still about having skilled, talented individuals that can help companies and organizations to be more competitive and effective in whatever environment that they're operating in. And it's still very much important to have a sense of place or a quality of place or whatever community character term that you want to call it that will ensure that your community is attractive to those individuals who can then help companies be more efficient and effective. And that's what our planning process is all about. Yes, there are up and down cycles that affect some communities more than other communities. But the fundamentals is it's not really going to affect a five-year planning process that we've honed over the last 10 years.
Just make a living here and, you know, have the services they want and so on. It's a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful area, very desirable. So that's really not the question here. But anyway, what's your time frames?
Our time frame is we operate under a 6-month time frame generally for most of our plans.
Six months. Okay.
Yes. So if we started in May, then we would end in, I guess, 6 months from then would be November or October. Can't count though. But yes, yeah, we generally have a 6-month time frame. Beg your pardon?
That's fine, because there was some question about the last company that having ending the survey or whatever you're going to do here, prior to the election wasn't desirable. But you know, that was just it wasn't my position at all. Explain organic opportunities.
Organic opportunities. Yeah, I'd be happy to go back to that. That I guess what I was trying to say is, and maybe I didn't make it clear, is, you know, some communities, whenever you go in, they will really want to reach for the stars or have a, you know, they have stars in their eyes and they think that they have an opportunity to do something that really is not reasonable or feasible. And what we're looking at is opportunities that primarily exist within the local community and the local economy. I don't think it's any kind of it's any secret that the vast majority of jobs that are created nationally are of existing employers or existing opportunities. And you know, economic development is not just about targeting new companies, but it's also about fostering growth within existing companies and also helping assist startup development. Entrepreneurs that are in the community already. One thing that I'd like to step
back. So what does organic mean?
Organic means that it's not forced.
Okay. Okay.
In other words. I would like to address the place issue. We define quality of place as being an outsider's perspective versus an insider's perspective. And I think that I'll go out on a limb here, and I'll say, yes, this is a very, very beautiful place, but there are still some issues in terms of your community character that could be improved upon.
No question about it.
And right. that is included within the place discussion, and it's not necessarily about the weather and the hills.
How, as far as, you know, Walmart, hoping that they will be doing an EIR if when they, you know, and how's that going to, how's your study and your work going to work with their doing the EIR crossover? Can you explain that?
Would you like to address that?
If you're asking about the retail portion of the economic development planning process?
Well, they're going to be doing an EIR, you know,
right. The
Del Rio area, and it includes a lot of other things, you know. And
right.
So how do you work?
I mean, honestly, I don't think what we're asked to look at in this process is necessarily a matter of environmental or, you know, fiscal impact of a particular retailer. And frankly, I think we'd rather pull back from that in order to make the economic development planning process work without getting the whole community sidetracked onto, you know, when every meeting we have here is going to be about the Walmart. And I think it's important that we pull back a bit from the specifics of the Walmart.
Yeah. But you'd have to include that somehow in your report, your final report. It'd be part of it, right? Wouldn't it?
Well, absolutely. And I mean, 6 months from now, I mean, as this process moves forward, we're going to see, presumably, that project will be taking shape in some way in terms of what the city is likely to approve and what's likely to actually happen out there. And there will be more information available to us later about, you know, sort of, who are the other tenants looking at the site and what might complement it out in that part of the city.
Right. Okay, well, thank you. And I had a couple other questions in regards to your cost was?
It's $110,000.
$110,000, okay. And then you talked about surveys. Is there a possibility of surveying? We have about 9,000 residents, and we did a survey on our stadium park, and we mailed out to everybody. And I thought the public really hit the issues right on the nose. You know, we got back about 10% of those surveys, and I thought they really hit the issue. I think if everybody is included somehow, they're going to get it right. You know, what they want and so on and so forth. So do you do those types of surveys? You said paper surveys. Do you? What did you mean?
quite frankly, we prefer not to do the paper surveys ourselves. We would rely on the city to incur those printing expenses. We would be very happy to help design a survey and analyze the survey, but the actual expenses of the mailers and the printing costs, that would not be included within our budget.
But my point is you know, if you just do public outreach and so on and so forth, you get a high percentage of political activists or people that are very politically astute and so on. And really what we're trying to do here is service the entire community and get input from all of them. That's why, I would favor that. But in the online surveys, how accurate are they? We hear they're not accurate.
Quite honestly, every single methodology that you use is going to be skewed one way or another.
Right.
There's those individuals who, whenever they check their mail, they'll see something that is not either a bill or personal letter, and they'll just throw it in the trash. There are those individuals who will not answer the phone because they don't recognize the call on their caller ID, and so they're not going to be included in the survey. There are those individuals who now are just only on cell phones, and so you can't reach those. And those typically are the people who are in their 20s and 30s. And if you do it online, then you can't reach the people who don't have online access. So every single survey methodology that you can come up with is going to be skewed one way or another. So just as a caveat there.
Yeah.
Sure, of course.
We're going to be working with TIP on the community input thing. And one of the things I think, the communities, we've actually just contacted a Catholic priest at the Wright Parish to help us get a focus group together. And in Gunnison, where these folks drive long distances to go to work in all sorts of different resort communities, we ended up having it at 8 in the evening and having to provide pizza and childcare and translators. But we got a great focus group, and we got a great deal of information about people where people are doing their business. Mm-hmm. And, when we're going through this process, and I think all of us here are committed to a great deal of time on the ground here. Mm-hmm. In our proposal, I forget what the number of days we had talked about was, but, at this point, we're already up to 8 days of man hours just to talk about doing the study. We're open to spending a lot of time on the ground to make sure that we do get a good sample of this community and hear from the people who need to be heard from, whose voices need to be part of the process.
Don't spend too much time here. You'll be buying a house, okay?
I have a question. One of the issues here, our world or our problems here in Atascadero, they're not exclusive to the Walmart issue. But it is a contentious issue, naturally. But we have, we have all these other opportunities for economic development. And the idea here is to create, to hopefully create a fabric that may include a Walmart. So that's the hope, is that if your consulting firm is chosen, that you help us construct that fabric that's necessary to create a vibrant economy here. And certainly your comments about implementation are something that's extremely important. And what is it that you can do to really kickstart the implementation component? Because everybody who has, I think, spoken has alluded to these past surveys and studies, and it is something that's vitally important to our community. To how do we kickstart this and make sure it gets accomplished?
As a consultant, I'll probably say that the thing that is less advantageous for me. But any consultant can write any good plan. And really what it comes down to is the leadership in the community and engaging that leadership. Otherwise, it's going to just sit on a shelf. And what we feel like we specialize in, or one of our strengths, is really engaging those individuals, those organizations, and those actors who can move the ball forward finally. And we do that through our public input process by honing it down into who are those key individuals, whether they're public sector, whether the private sector is an organization that hasn't really been engaged in the past but maybe has some leadership that can do that. And I think we have demonstrated our experience and our success in that in some of the case study examples that are provided. One of the key ones was in El Dorado, Arkansas, with the oil company that funded $50 million for the public schools.
All right, thank you. Well, we've taken it to an hour now. Are there any other questions?
Well, just yes. Go ahead, and, go ahead, Councilman Clay. I've got a list.
Councilmember, I'd like to keep it.
I just got one question is, you know, to me it's the private sector that's going to have to do a lot of this, and if they don't buy in or if you can't get them to come, why, we can do everything in the world. But
chances on more, one, it's out of California, and two, it's on a regional basis. I understand that we are in competition on a regional basis, but could you comment on how you can have two companies working together that have primarily worked on a regional basis, how you will be able to work with a city population under 30,000?
I do apologize if I characterized our firm as being primarily regional. There are a number of clients that I've had populations that have ranged from 6,000 to, you know, the county of 300,000. I've worked in very small places all over the place. And so I wouldn't say that the bulk of our work is regional. I would actually say the bulk of our work is with individual communities.
Could you name a couple?
Seminole, Texas, Huntsville, Texas.
Anybody in California?
Watsonville, California.
Watsonville. Anybody else?
I have not worked personally in any California
community. That's fine. An area you spent a lot of time discussing what I would call macroeconomic indicators.
Mm-hmm.
Must have liked macroeconomics more than microeconomics in college. But you had mentioned, as you can say, most of that information is in the paper at this point. But looking at national data, are you familiar with the UCSB Economics Project in our region? Have you reviewed that data?
I am, as a matter of fact. And one of the things that, unfortunately, I went over time, but I wanted to talk about was one of the issues that they raised in their report was, it seems that the city of Atascadero, its population has been relatively stagnant vis-a-vis Paso Robles, for example. And in that study, they do cite that they believe that one of the barriers of entry for population growth here is the high housing costs for families and young adults. And so from my perspective, if that's one of the major obstacles to economic vitality, which would be supported through talent attraction, is you've got to deal with the affordable housing issue. And in traditional economic development, you don't talk about housing, but I believe that, you know, if that's an issue, that's something that we're very much prepared to look at, and we have in other communities.
So one area, and I'll get to a list of possible strategies you had suggested. I'll add that to the list that you would consider looking at housing. Of course, a lot of folks in the industry say the one strategy for that is increasing land zoned to build housing on. Mm-hmm. That's not something that's going to happen in our area, you understand?
Mm-hmm. No, I understand.
So would you have any off-the-cuff ideas on how you would help us with that struggle on housing?
Well, I think that it would address a lot of your issues, and, you know, I haven't looked at your zoning. I don't know what the appetite is for the community for densification, mixed-use development, which would include both there would be an affordable housing component, maybe 10, 15, 25%, whatever is necessary.
Sure.
Within
the past, attracted that entrepreneurial or young labor force. Again, we're in competition with San Luis Obispo.
Yes,
and so given some of that information, did you have ideas how we might compete with our seven other cities that are also after that labor force?
My response would be it depends on what Atascadero wants as its vision as a community. If Atascadero is content with primarily or being a magnet for older individuals or retirees, then that would most definitely influence any recommendations that we had in the plan.
Well, I think we were trying to get a balanced economy, and we'd like a young labor force, mm-hmm. but we don't have Cal Poly. San Luis Obispo does. We don't have Cuesta College. San Luis Obispo mm-hmm. does. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you had given thought to how we would attract that labor force you were talking about.
I would say it would boil down to three or four things would need to be looked at, just thinking off the cuff. Of course, I have not.
Well, if it's off the cuff, don't
sure.
worry about it. You'll have an opportunity, maybe. I look at you'd mentioned some specific strategies, and I don't know if they were just kind of ideas to throw out, but are these things, it sounds like these were what you had concluded in other areas, and I see about four of them. One was helping communities to convince their communities to raise sales tax. That would be one strategy that might come out of your study.
That was in one specific community in Arkansas where they felt that they needed to have some sort of funding mechanism to support the implementation of the plan, which would be from the local Chamber of Commerce that would be contracted through the city council, and that would be the funding mechanism that they could use at that particular instance.
Sure. So one community you helped raise sales tax. It looked like in another community you had an existing foundation of an industry. It may be sunsetting, such as oil companies, but you were able to, in another community, stimulate oil companies to invest in the community or existing sunsetting business, folks that are on that tail end of the growth curve. Do you have any ideas of what those companies would be in our area?
In terms of sunsetting industries in that Atascadero, or are we just talking about industries?
If we're not going to go to the people to ask for sales tax, are there, did you, you'd mentioned there's one strategy used elsewhere to go to existing corporations. Did you have any thoughts on who you'd approach in our community for helping us jumpstart this economy?
At this point, I don't know.
Sure. Another strategy.
Excuse me, Tom. When we embarked on this, the idea was to for each council member to have two or three questions, and then hopefully
that wasn't my thought. Sometimes you like to kick the tires, and
well, and I recognize that, and I'm sure the public would like to speak as well.
Well, I think I represent a lot of the public, and I have a lot of questions I'd like to go through. If you allow me to hold my questions for the applicant until after public comment, I'd be happy to do that.
I don't think that's good.
I hope you're not going to be.
Excuse me, Jerry. There's dialogue right now. Oh, okay, we'll do that. Is there anybody from the public that would like to comment or particularly make or ask questions as related to this particular consulting firm? Seeing none? We'll return it to the council, and again, I would really hope that we could show courtesy to the next consulting firm by allowing them to start perhaps at 9:30. Go ahead with your questions.
Thank you. You mentioned a lot of your strategy would be to now look at what already exists, but to get the community excited. I think, again, it was kind of looking on the labor side, not only recruiting a young entrepreneurial or educated labor force, but also to identify those you might call connectors if you read one book, or entrepreneurs or leaders in the community, and that's something you've done before. Could you give me a little idea how you would go about doing that in our community?
A lot of it would boil down to the public input process, where we hone it through, where we really start identifying who are the key individuals, who are the key stakeholders that can help implement the plan. And, you know, every single community is different, and I can't speak directly to what that would look like in Atascadero and who those individuals might be. I am an outsider. I freely admit that. And, you know, maybe there aren't any of those champions or stakeholders in this community.
There are.
And we would do our utmost to ferret those individuals out and get them engaged and understand what the opportunities might be and hopefully get them excited about it and help assist in the city in its implementation of the plan. Otherwise, this plan will sit on a shelf and will not be implemented.
I agree. I was just trying to get an idea because you'd mentioned, you know, you got a priest involved and bought pizza was one way you got some folks involved. But how would you get this category of folks that, let's say, business leaders, entrepreneurs, community leaders, how would you – what have you done in other areas to get them involved and get buy-in?
You know, we've spoken in front of Rotary Clubs, in front of Chambers of Commerce, in front of the old – industrial foundations. I'm not sure if that exists here. We've also just uncovered them from, you know, someone will tell us that there's a guy over here that's doing something that's really neat or has a great idea. We need to go talk to him. And we do. We really like to sit down on with personal interviews and speak one-on-one and really understand what those people might bring to the table and what their ideas are and how those can be incorporated with the plan and to help them be empowered to help push the plan forward. So it's a case-by-case basis. We just have to get our feet wet and understand what the issues are here.
Mr. Mayor, members of council, I'm Doug Svensson with Applied Development Economics, and we're very pleased to be with you here again this evening. And with me, again, is Kathy Studwell, who's a senior associate with Applied Development Economics, and Irv Hamilton, who is vice president of the Placemaking Group. And you may recall we were here in February. And at that time, we took the opportunity to go through our scope of work in some detail and our approach to the project. And tonight we thought we'd do something a little different. We had the opportunity to give you a number of examples of projects that we've done, and we thought we'd focus our discussion around those examples to kind of illustrate the kind of work that we do in similar communities and how some of those specific approaches that we've used we think apply very well here in Atascadero and will result in an economic strategy that you'll find useful and realistic and something that you can move forward with. So what I'd like to do is first start with our assessment of what your key issues are and the things that we're trying to accomplish through the economic strategy, and then spend most of the presentation discussing those project examples that we presented to you and how they relate to the kinds of issues that you're looking at here. And in that process, we want to talk about our approach to place branding and marketing as one aspect of the economic strategy, and we want to touch on the public input process because we think that's a very important aspect of doing this project. And then I'm going to review the scope of work again to kind of pull the pieces together in terms of all the products that we intend to produce through this process and just wrap up with a brief overview about ourselves. And hopefully we'll go through this quickly and can leave plenty of time for your questions given the hour. The key issues as we see them are primarily focused on a vital downtown for Atascadero, and as part of that, having a very strong retail sector in the community. And part of that is a desire to provide a well-rounded base of shopping opportunities for local residents, and that adds to the quality of life of the community. But also very important is the fiscal aspect of retail development. And the sales tax, as was discussed earlier, is an important revenue for California cities. And so it's critically vital to have a solid retail sector in order to be able to provide the kinds of quality services that that neighborhood residents expect. At the same time, we feel an extremely important goal of the process is to diversify the local economy here and to create the kinds of jobs that are important to the people who live here and to the people in this region. And there are a number of areas that we think are important to look at in that respect. We feel there's a strong tourism potential here that really could be further developed in a lot of ways. A lot of that's related to the wine industry in this area. There's also, we feel, the opportunity for basic job development, and we'd like to discuss a bit how we've approached that in some other communities and what we think some of the opportunities are here in Atascadero. As part of the implementation plan, it's going to be very important to present all the ideas in the community have been expressed and discussed as part of the overall consensus of the community about what kind of strategy you want to move forward with. So the process in a lot of ways is just as important as the end products. And so we're going to put a lot of emphasis on public input and engaging all segments of the community. And we're going to show you how we're going to develop an action plan that you can move forward on. And I appreciate the comments and questions earlier about you have had a lot of work done. We're familiar with those things. We know the other resources that are available in this area. But at the end of the day, you've got to put it all together into a series of steps that you, Atascadero, can implement, and that as a council and as a community, as a chamber, and the champions in the community are willing to move forward with, pardon me, and that's how progress is made. And so that needs to be an outcome of this overall process. We gave you a number of prior reports, I think six, although the request was for three. We thought we'd do a moon rover instead of a tricycle, and so we gave you lots of tires to kick, and I hope that that worked for you. So we'd like to go through some of those tonight and explain why we chose those particular examples. We've been in business since 1985, so we've already passed our 20-year anniversary as a company, and we've done, during that time, more than 100 economic strategies throughout the entire Western United States. So we have a lot of things we could choose from, but we thought these particular ones are important to Atascadero because they represent economic environments that are similar and cities that are facing some issues that we think are very similar to yours, and we wanted to get to focus on that. So I'm going to start off with the first three, and then Kathy's going to come in and talk about some of the ones that she's been more involved with, and then Irv. So we're going to hand this off a bit as we go through the presentation. I am going to try to go through it fairly quickly and hope that you have questions on some specifics when we're done. Capitola is a community I think you're all familiar with. It's a fascinating little town in Santa Cruz County. It has a very nice downtown village that caters to tourism and looks great. It's very quaint. But when you really look at the numbers, it doesn't always perform that well. It's very seasonal. There's a lot of turnover in the businesses. There are some issues that they have with the real estate there where the businesses are in buildings that they don't own and can't control. How they're maintained or the rents and those things. So there were a number of issues that they needed to look at. And part of our strategy was to look at a broader and deeper tourism market there. So we took the time to do an in-depth analysis for the lodging sector and determined that there's actually a lot of demand for high-quality lodging in Capitola, and they have some sites that can support that, and if they can achieve that, then they can bring in a more solid base for their tourism and support that downtown village in a much stronger way. And so that's a specific kind of market analysis. While that in and of itself wasn't a retail analysis, it was directly associated with a market wave of development needs to be for them on 41st Avenue, that they need to transition that mall into a lifestyle center. They need to consider mixed-use development as a way of creating an environment that is attractive to shoppers, because in our surveys there, we found that many, many people go over the hill to Santa Clara and San Jose because they're not attracted to the retail shopping opportunities in Capitola, even though there are a lot of stores there. So just on the quantity basis, it's there, but on the quality basis and in terms of the types of product selection that their population is looking for, they're not meeting it. So they need to take the next step. What we've been able to do is get them, since we completed that strategy, we've gotten them two additional grants through the state for $70,000 to look at specific zoning and planning things that they can do along 41st Avenue to begin this transition toward mixed use and more of a lifestyle center. So we've been able to help them actually move along the road on implementation, and they're doing that now. One other thing that's important there is they are right in the center of a very active home remodeling market. They have even higher housing prices than you have here. So people don't buy new houses. They expand and remodel the houses they've got. And so there's a tremendous market for green building construction materials to fuel that remodel market. And Capitola has decided they want to be the center of those products. And so they're looking at, as an alternative business development, bringing in distributors that can provide access to those energy-saving devices and a variety of green building materials and interior technologies that will help people do what they'd like to do, which is make their homes more energy efficient and overall reflect green building principles. And so there's a market there, and Capitola is a small place, but it's situated in a market that feeds into that kind of business development. A major consideration there is they don't have any large sites for development, so the scale of business needs to fit the community, and these kind of businesses can do that. And so those were the kinds of recommendations that came out of our work, and again, we've gotten some funding for them to actually move forward with some specifics to do those things. Gonzales, again, a small town, but very much focused on wanting to improve their downtown and take advantage of their tourism development opportunities in their region. Our project included a detailed market analysis to look at specific business development opportunities. We also teamed with a planning firm who did a completely new design for them. And we developed a theme. The physical design of the downtown and the marketing plan followed a theme of capitalizing on the South Monterey County wine trail that's developed, which goes from Gonzales through Soledad, Greenfield, King City, all those wineries that they've been developing over the last number of years are beginning to coalesce into a critical mass where they can really market that as a tourist destination. And Gonzales wanted to take advantage of that, and they were successful. This particular building that you see here was a bank. The community won an award from the California American Planning Association for excellence in planning and implementation. Moving down south to Southern California, Cerritos, is a different kind of place, but had some really interesting economic development challenges. They have a lot of major retail there, but they were having trouble with their neighborhood commercial centers. They were too small. They were unable to serve the local population, and so we did an extensive site survey and leakage analysis to demonstrate how they could redesign and expand those neighborhood centers to make a difference. But really the key issue for Cerritos was a transition in the job base. They have a labor force there that in many ways is like yours. It's an upper-end labor force. It's high on experienced people, not a lot of entry-level workers. It's a quality community, but their job base was all in distribution, light manufacturing, jobs that really didn't fit their own labor force. So they had this interesting situation of lots of people commuting in every day to work in Cerritos, but all their people commuting out elsewhere to take other kinds of jobs. And they're seeing a lot of transition in that older industrial base. So we worked with them to develop a number of recommendations to redevelop some of their industrial areas into higher level business park kinds of spaces so that they could attract the kind of professional firms that actually match their labor force. And at the same time, create more of a tax base and a redevelopment tax increment base. One of their challenges is their redevelopment is due to sunset, and so they're looking for ways. They've been very successful over a number of years at using redevelopment, but now they need to find ways of moving economic development forward without that tool. And so if you had a chance to look at our report, there are a number of recommendations about fiscal ways or ways for the city to participate in economic development and maintain their revenue streams in ways other than redevelopment. So that was a major part of the focus that they wanted in their strategy. And then finally, they recognized the need for business retention and expansion for some of their key firms and were willing to devote a staff person to that effort. But for a community their size, even that is really tough to cover all those bases. So we've now put them in touch with a business assessment service that, pardon me, uses a unique kind of software that allows them to assess business needs very quickly and get to the bottom of what each individual business needs to do in their own strategic planning. And it greatly increased the efficiency of their staff and their ability to reach out to their business community. So we've helped them with the implementation of their business retention and expansion program. That's continuing on into this coming summer. But it's an aspect of, we finished the strategy last year, but now we're helping them move the program forward with some specific tools that are working for them. Milpitas is a community, as you know, in the Bay Area and Silicon Valley. Again, it's actually kind of a retail powerhouse, but facing a lot of competitive issues and a couple of the others that she's worked on. Kathy?
Good evening, Mayor. Good evening, City Council members and city staff. It's a pleasure to be here again and presenting to you some other aspects about ADE that we didn't share with you on our last visits. Milpitas was an interesting community right in the heart of Silicon Valley, home to the headquarters of many Fortune 500 companies. But what was going on there is Milpitas was home to a lot of the manufacturing for Silicon Valley. And what was happening is manufacturing of high-tech products, medical devices, computer parts, peripherals, was being moved out of the United States. And so Milpitas was being faced with, well, if we're not going to be the manufacturing center for Silicon Valley, what are we going to be? And which is one of the reasons why they asked us to do an economic development strategy for them, in addition to the threats they were seeing to their retail prowess. They are home to a very large regional mall. So what we did was we interviewed all the CEOs of these major corporations in Milpitas and really got the skinny on what trends were affecting them and how they were basically being affected by the lack of engineering students graduating from American universities and the difficulty of retaining foreign-born engineers who got educated here. There were new opportunities for them in China and India, and so they were going back home. So with the lack of engineering students graduating from American universities, the inability to hold on to foreign-born engineers, they were putting their design centers in Scotland and Eastern Europe and in India and other places where they can find engineers, and therefore the manufacturing followed. And manufacturing went to lower-cost areas where the housing prices were more affordable. So what we developed was a strategy for them to move away from manufacturing and into innovation services, and that would mean a whole different approach to how they did land use planning, especially for their industrial areas. It changed the amount of industrial space they would need in the future. It meant they needed to focus more on Class A office space rather than the kinds of space that in industrial manufacturing companies needed. The other issue facing Milpitas is that it had a poor image. The big Fortune 500 companies that were located in Milpitas always recommended to their employees that they not live in Milpitas. Milpitas was not seen as a desirable place to live. So that if we recommended that if Milpitas was going to be a center of innovation, it was going to need to develop communities that would attract innovative people, the attorneys, the engineers, the designers, it's about 70% or so in the Bay Area. They are the international city, and that was going to be their niche. And that had ramifications for strategies having to do with education, their school district as well. So but more importantly, this was their very first economic development strategy. So we as a firm worked with their brand new economic development commission and educated them about economic development. What is economic development? What are the various tools of economic development? How do we go about economic development? And in the process of doing that, educated the community members as well, build champions for several of the strategies. They are being implemented now. But what helped that along the way is a very detailed implementation plan that ranked, not only ranked each of those goals and the strategies within each of those goals, but also developed timelines for achievement of those goals, identified the resources needed to achieve those goals, both in terms of money and in staff. And as a result, they hired a full-time economic development manager, and they are now working on implementing that. And it was approved unanimously by the entire city council. Greenfield is a different, is a very different place. It's right in the heart of Salinas Valley. It's Salinas Valley being the salad bowl of America. It's where all your lettuce and spinach and broccoli and green beans and whatnot come from. But that's also going through a transformation. We know that in Atascadero that tourism is a key driver of the economy and will continue to be so. And I think that based on what we've heard and read and talked about Atascadero, we know that that's a desirable thing to do in the future. So we wanted to share what we did in Greenfield. They were updating their general plan. They wanted to preserve agriculture because they know that's their economic engine. However, agriculture doesn't require as many workers as it used to. So there's a lot of businesses that are wanting for customers. And two things we did. We looked at the feasibility of converting part of the city's northern area into an artisan ag and visitor services zone. And what that meant was looking at the tourism potential, the potential for various recreation and tourism activities in this particular area of the city. And what we found is that it was feasible, that the what you needed to make it happen was to provide resources to property owners, farm operators on how to move from a commodity production-based model to a value-added-based model, bring in tourism, bed and breakfast, more marketing-oriented activities. The other thing we did for Greenfield was some economic gardening where we worked with individual businesses along El Camino Real and asked them, what do you need to grow? And we helped them. We provided make impact of tourism in Butte County now and what will it likely be in the future. But more importantly, identify for us what are our future tourism opportunities. In what areas can we expand our tourism activities to reap some of the rewards in terms of TOT taxes and sales taxes? Now, you have to understand, Butte County is one of those counties that does not allow urban development, urbanized development, outside of city limits. And so even though all the tourists were coming for sites that were essentially in the county, whether it be RV parks or bike trails or wildflowers or boating, fishing, whatever it is, that was all occurring in the county, whereas the city was reaping the TOT taxes in the way of, you know, all the lodging and the restaurants and the stores and whatnot. So what could the county do, given that it had this policy? And so we recommended a few things We looked at the economic feasibility of three alternative approaches for them, looked at what the overall economic impact would be for that, and then recommended policy changes in all the various parts of their general plan to support tourism growth. Now, we're going to hand it over to Irv Hamilton with the Placemaking Group to talk more about branding and the importance to actually implementing your economic development strategy.
Thank you, Kathy. Just a quick comment about what Placemaking Group is. We are a marketing communication firm that specializes in land use. And the land uses range from tourism to commercial development to all manner of land uses, and that's our specialty. The issue of branding is, get this on the right page here. The issue of branding is a term that's used all the time, and there are a lot of definitions of what branding is, but branding in general terms is the definition of what a Tascadero is. What is a Tascadero as a product? You say, well, it's much more than a product. That's much more than a product, but from a marketing perspective, it is a product. And fortunately, you have opportunities to shape that product. And so the question, what do we want a Tascadero to be, is a very valid question. And it's one that is that can incorporate the product can be shaped, is what we're saying. While Kathy finds our place here, I just want to talk. Thank you. I just want to talk. Won't this take me where I want to go? One of the questions is, why should anybody want to visit Napa? And Napa has a reputation as being an industrial city and not a very interesting place. And the program that we developed was the town of Napa is, in fact, the gateway to the Napa Valley. So if you're going to enjoy the Napa Valley, going to see Napa it makes a lot of sense, and there's a lot to see and do. Now, the program got started, and we work in a very dynamic environment here. The program got started, and we were ready to go, and New Year's Eve is a very big time in Napa with a lot of activity, except what happened on New Year's Eve 2 years ago was the Napa River flooded, put the entire city underwater. So New Year's Eve was lost. And what we did was we came up with a follow-on program as the river receded on January 27th and January 28th. We had a festival. We had a New Year's Eve festival. We said the river's down, the party's on, come celebrate in downtown Napa. So sometimes you have to be quick on your feet. But the main point is that that art conveyed, even though it was in a flood situation, conveyed the festive nature of what we were communicating. A couple of other things. There was a map that we used in the promotional materials, and a lot of people didn't know what there was to see and do in Napa. And this was a way for us to communicate the activities that were available. And we got lots of co-op, lots of restaurants and wine bars and accommodations and shops and stores to participate in the program. The fact was that belated New Year's Eve celebration generated more business in Napa than the previous year where they had a normal New Year's activity. One thing that I guess really is important to say on this point is that so many economic development programs take it up to the point of implementation, but not beyond that, because strategic planning firms or their research firms, and they don't do what we do. They don't create ads. They don't create websites. They don't create publicity and so on. So they take it up to the point of now it's the time to market it. But what ADE and our firm have done is link together so that the marketing of the destination becomes a part of the overall process. We work hands-on, and we share the experience that we have with them, and they in turn share the experience with us. Branding is Fairfield is a client of ours, and whereas Napa was talking about tourism, I thought it would be useful to click through some examples when we talk about publicity or collateral or web or whatever. What are we really talking about? So I'm going to show you some specific examples relating to a Fairfield program that is geared for business attraction and business retention of a website that we did. And the one on the right says starting a business in Fairfield is the headline. And it lists the various resources. If you want to do business in Fairfield, it makes it easy for you to get in there and get to the right people and get done what needs to be done. There are six categories, six industry categories that we've been working on. One is food on the left, and it looks like it might be grapes being crushed, and they actually are grape jelly bellies, because as some of you may know, Fairfield is the jelly bean capital of the world now. We also, with other advertising, have talked about the fact that the headline is hard to read, but it says Fairfield is tech ready, and that is that there is a trained workforce that's ready to come in and handle technology and the work with the community colleges and other educational institutions makes that program even better. We believe very much in dialogue with the marketplace, and these are email bulletins that we send out to prospects, to companies that have located there, because retention is part of what we're talking about, in order to keep them informed on what's happening. And this is an article from East Bay Business Times. The headline is Food Companies Cluster in Fairfield. Part of our job working with ADE in this particular context, but part of our job is to look for opportunities. And one of the opportunities that we found going through the SWOT analysis was that Fairfield has a large supply of high-quality water. And the food processing companies, Jelly Belly being one, and there's also an Anheuser-Busch brewery there, are just two examples. And so we've been publicizing that as an asset and as a benefit, and it's been successful in attracting more food manufacturing, food processing companies, because they do have the availability of water there. I worked with a gentleman some years ago, and his favorite message was, always ask for the order. And this is an ad that we produce for Fairfield. Why choose Fairfield? It's a business-ready location. We talk about the fact that the entitlements are in place, and you can build and get going there in a hurry. Skilled workforce, we talked about that. And real value, because it's part of the overall Bay Area, but because it's on the outer rim of the Bay Area, the real estate costs there are substantially less for commercial space, industrial space, and residential space are less than in other areas. That quickly is some comments on that, and I'm going to turn it back to this guy, Doug.
I know we're running, and I want to finish here before we run out of time, so I'll just go quickly. I mentioned the importance of public input. We are prepared to design some way of reaching out to the public and getting input. Basically, We are looking at a process of that's going to build on the just listening work that you've done. So there's an enormous amount of information about what the public is interested in, what you've talked about, what the ideas are. And we're going to try to focus our public input on specific issues that relate to this economic strategy, and we come to each event with information to help focus the discussion and provide a context for the discussion, so that at each point in time, we move the discussion forward, and there's progress. And it isn't so much a free-for-all discussion as it is a facilitated discussion toward a goal of agreement and consensus on specific issues as we move forward. So, again, there are a number of ways of approaching this, but we think we've got a handle on the community and an approach that will keep people engaged. And again, we're looking at basically a 9-month process. We have suggested a couple possible surveys, and I just want to mention, in particular, I think the household survey would be the most useful. It would be a mail-out survey. It's an extra cost, and I'm going to talk about cost in just a moment. But it would feed in primarily to our retail analysis, but also give us information about what people are looking for on the retail side. We would structure that in a specific way to get information that we would use in our market research, but at the same time get opinions from people on specific retail options that they're interested in. That's probably the most cost-effective. It sounds similar to what Councilmember Clay was describing. It's a mail drop. You generally expect about a 10% response. It would provide useful information, again, to the market research, but also give people another opportunity to have their input. So that would be something that we'd want to discuss with you if it looks like you're interested. To recap the scope of work that we're proposing, these are all elements, deliverables that you would get out of the process that we're proposing. There would be an industry and tourism market analysis, so looking at specific business opportunities and the job potential from those opportunities. There would be a comprehensive retail analysis that would look at all the opportunities community-wide and particularly focus on downtown development opportunities. There would be a SWOT analysis, which is strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. This is a key component of developing a strategy, because we know what specific things we can build from and what things we need to deal with as a community to be successful in economic development. We would do a fiscal analysis as part of this process because, as we've discussed, economic development is a public investment process. You're going to be not only investing the funds in doing the strategy, but you're going to then need to invest in the implementation of the strategy, and you need to know what the return on that investment is going to be, and that's what the fiscal analysis gives you. It also, in my mind, is a very useful tool in the public process because it gives the public a sense of what the returns are from these activities. You know, what will this tact with your businesses here in the community, and to be able to support those businesses that are in a position to expand, because that is far and above the most effective economic development approach you can take, and from a cost standpoint. We'll be looking at workforce. Had some questions earlier, some discussion earlier about the nature of the workforce in Atascadero. How can you plug into not only in terms of recruiting people to the community, but in terms of working with those who are here to meet the needs of employers? IRV will be working on a communication strategy, not only through the process of the economic development strategic plan, but also, you know, how does the city communicate with its residents, with its businesses, and with the outside marketplace. There'll be the public involvement process, which I talked about, and then at the end of the entire process, there'll be an action plan that lays out steps, 1, 2, 3, 4, the time frame for those steps, the budget required of the city to implement those steps, and the staffing investments that would be needed, as well as infrastructure. So it's really a complete package. Since we're putting everything out here this evening, you get all that for $98,000. That's our base. That's the base price in our in our proposal. The survey, if you choose to do that, was an extra $12,000. So that gets us to $110,000, but it includes all these items. So that was our basic proposal back in October, and we feel that we can deliver on that. So at this point, let me just wrap up and say, you know, what you get with us are our senior people doing this work for you. I'm the president of the company. I'll be here working with you. Kathy's a senior associate of the firm with 25 years experience in this field. Irv is vice president of Placemaking Group. We're in a position to bring the resources to bear that are needed to move this process forward for you and be successful with it. Again, we have a lot of experience with public involvement. I think that's very important here in Atascadero, and we put a lot of emphasis on that. But mostly we're focused on helping you make decisions as a city, and that's what's key, is being able to move forward with things and make decisions that this is the direction we're going to go, and let's do that. And that, I think, at the end of the day, is the most important aspect of this entire process. So with that, we'd be more than happy to answer your questions and any questions the public might have. Thank you very much.
And thank you for that presentation. Councilmember Luna.
Thank you, Doug. Thanks to your team for an excellent presentation, which goes to demonstrating to anybody who watches this or to the public in general that Walmart is not all the economic development that we should be concerned with. And with that, I'll ask you the same question that I did with the TIP people, and that is, how do you see Walmart fitting into what you're going to do?
We're very familiar with the CEQA process that specific project will need to go through. And I think it will run parallel in some ways. Well, obviously, it'll run parallel in time to the strategy. There are certain data that we'll be using, that they'll be using, that we need to be sure we're all on the same page from those standpoint of those assumptions. But at the end of the day, they'll need to make a determination about impacts of that project. We'll be more concerned with the broader strategy of how does the retail pieces fit together for Atascadero. And whatever decision from a policy standpoint you make as a council about that specific project, you know, we can roll that into the strategy and off we go. So it's something that there are some points, I think, of coordination, but basically, as you said, there's many other subjects that we'll be dealing with while that analysis carries along its own path.
Thank you.
Mayor Pro Tem Burrell.
I have a couple of questions. The question I asked Tip, you kind of answered, so I'm not going to re-ask that question. How do you see the economic strategy addressing the community's desire for quality of life? I think we all on the council agree we have a good quality of life, and I think a lot of us fear the loss of that if we develop too much. How does a company like yours address those conflicts?
Well, economic development occurs at a number of different points along the spectrum, and the quality of businesses that you develop for the community is a reflection of the quality of life that you're looking for. And as with the case of Cerritos, they really felt they needed to move up the economic spectrum in order to really have the kind of economic base that was commensurate with the community that they've built there and the people that live there. And so it's looking for market opportunities that respond to that niche. And again, if your labor force is more experienced, we do a lot of work in the gold country, the foothills, a lot of people moving up there with tremendous skills. You know, they've done well, retired, really are looking for a second career and are starting new businesses in this place. And they went there first because from a tourism standpoint, it was a fun place to go. And then they realized, gee, this would be a great place to live. And they're at an age where they've got the experience to either bring a business with them or to start a new business. And it's a tremendous engine for economic development. And actually, Capitola is the same way. So they're looking for a segment of businesses that respond to the people that are there and the kind of people that they can expect to have there. And that's how we match economic development with community quality.
And I believe some of the past studies has revealed that we do have a lot of businesses that are, you know, home-based, mm-hmm. you know, people who have moved here that have skills from other areas.
And if they're successful, then you can help them move out of the home into a business and begin to expand. And that, again, is the most effective kind of economic development.
Right. And then another question I had is when you were going through all the different examples, which I appreciate you doing that, does it happen that there's surprises during the analysis process and the public input process that we haven't thought of before?
The whole analysis of the lodging market was a last-minute decision. It wasn't something that was in our initial scope. We said, well, we know we need to look at tourism because there are tourists here, but when we really got to the bottom of it, we realized, well, we really need to know if there's a market for this or not, because if there's not, then we need to look in a different direction to move this forward. And so we stopped the process, we did that analysis, and we were able to document what their specific opportunities were. And based on that, then we could move forward with the strategy. So that was an unexpected element of that particular project. There are always new things. I've heard a number of new things here in Atascadero in my three visits so far, so I expect to hear more.
I think that we have a lot of ideas that are circulating and want to, you know, share some limelight. I know there's a lot of concern in our community about our local businesses and their success and failure. And when you do the fiscal analysis of the retail, do you give added weight to locally owned businesses in terms of the money that they add to the community and it circulates? Is that part of the analysis that you'll do?
It's part of the economic impact analysis in the sense of, you know, as economists, we talk about multiplier effects of businesses. And those that are locally owned and have local proprietors, there's an element of income that stays in the community that otherwise doesn't, and that's certainly part of that sort of. So it's not what we would call the direct effect, but kind of an indirect effect of that, and it's something that there's been a lot more research done on that in the last number of years because people are beginning to realize the entire retail market is moving to big, and there almost are no options except big. Because that's the national profile, and so people are looking for alternatives, and that kind of consideration has become very important.
Okay, well, thank you for your presentation.
Councilmember Clay.
Yes, thanks for both of you for great presentations. The innovative services, could you give us an example of several of those?
I'll give you an example, and then Kathy might want to jump in. We just did a very in-depth analysis for the Sacramento region of their business base, and we discovered that they have a very high proportion of professional and technical and scientific companies that are doing research and are doing a lot of they basically are companies that service other companies and help with knowledge creation and technology development and processes. And in that particular region, they're trying to make a big push on clean energy because they've got some companies there that are actually leading the way. But what we were able to show is that even though a recession is here now, they've got a very strong base of these companies that do nothing but innovation. They are looking at, again, research in new processes that are going to help the product development and manufacturing processes of these other companies that are getting into new fields. And so that's, I think, a very clear example of something that the region...
I'm really interested in this thing about branding because I think right now... our brand is not too good, our image, so to speak. When I first got on the council, I remember a fellow came into my office, and he was an artist, and he had this rendition of a sign, and it said, gateway to the wine country. And he wanted me to, you know, push this thing and get that on the south end of town and so on and so forth. And he was very impatient. And, you know, I was a rookie and I really didn't realize what he was pushing for. And he got, you know, he just went away. But and then I had another person come up the other day and said, well, we ought to start calling ourselves A-Town, you know, rather than Atascadero, because A is the first letter in the alphabet. And if you get an A in school, that's good and so on. So we ought to start referring. So is that, where does branding come in, and are those the types of things that that we might do?
That's a very good question. Let me ask Irv to answer that. He's a specialist.
I can give you a specific example, and that is one of our clients is the city of Benicia in the Bay Area. And they, what we've done with them with a lot of public input is to explore possibilities for a branding approach that ties in, interestingly, with how do you retain the quality of the neighborhoods with when you're seeking to bring other businesses in there. But we put together a theme line and a logo, did it with a lot of public involvement. We made, about 2 weeks ago, we made the presentation to the planning board, and they accepted it. And the next couple of weeks, we will be making that same presentation to the city council. And if they approve it, then we'll launch it right after that.
So generally, is it a one word or a quote?
Well, it depends.
A quote or?
Each one is a little bit different. And with the theme line for Benicia, we looked at probably 100 lines, and some of them were discarded pretty quickly. Some of them stayed in the process as we explored the alternatives. And it's a tricky process because it involves a lot of opinion, and there's no scientific way to do it. You come up with the ideas, you present them, you get a reaction from the people, and then you proceed accordingly.
Thank you. And then,
can I just ask what Benicia's line ended up being? I'm just curious.
The line for Benicia, there are so many of them rattling around. I think it was a day on the bay. And what we were promoting was the fact that there's a lot of waterfront area in Benicia. It's right there on the water. And we also incorporated into the logo, and I'm cheating a little bit because the city council hasn't approved it yet. I think it's in 2 weeks so that it goes before them. But there's a lot of art in Benicia. There are artists.
Thank you. 3 out of 5, that's not bad. You had mentioned, if I'm clear, a 9-month process, and I think I like what you're saying, that you would alternate months. 1 month you would do a community input activity, and then the following month you'd be on our agenda and we'd kind of get a status report and know how things are going. And you could see that still staying on a 9-month track, we'd have at least 4 reports or so to council, maybe more.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, thank you. And I can see the value of a household survey that is one tool, and I'd have some concerns if that was the only tool you were describing. The concern, and again, as you describe it, I think it's important that you've got a random sample and it's scientific in its base. But what I liked about the Buxton report was that it was a actual spending habits. It's kind of like a lot of folks say things, but what they actually do, how they spend their money, and that's what actually translates into sales tax for us, I think was interesting. I know you're going to incorporate that in, but could you, for example, I bet we'll all say we'd like Trader Joe's, been there, done that, tried that, but there's a reality of what, you know, and there's also a whole corporate process of who will locate given our demographics, and then maybe we can try to market something different. But how would you integrate in
those various sources of information that we lead to some of those deliverables you talked about.
That's exactly correct. The people have an idea of where they would like to shop. And so you get a lot of opinions about what they'd like to see in their community. But at the end of the day, on the other end of the spectrum, the businesses, and a lot of these are corporate, are looking at this from a perspective of what's a location that's going to maximize sales for them. And so they're looking at the market dynamics in the region and the income potential and the spending potential. And so it's important to understand what people would like, because that gives us a sense of the kind of the type of store that rings their bell in terms of the shopping experience they'd like to have. But at the end of the day, we have to be able to determine whether there's sufficient market support to make those realistic opportunities, because you don't want to be pursuing business development or traction opportunities that are clearly unrealistic. So the part of the survey that we actually use the most is their actual shopping behavior. And so there's a component of it that asks them, where do you shop for a whole range of products, goods, and services? With that, we create a map of the regional market area and then match that up with estimates of actual spending potential and create a market projection, and that's the kind of thing that the businesses are looking for. And that's, you know, Buxton gives them that to a degree. The problem, I think, is that there needs to be more of an implementation step there, and there needs to be more consideration of what other kinds of retail opportunities might the community have.
I like everything on your list. Thinking you're really going to pull that off for... And I think one thing that Councilman Bayrou brought up, I think there is a desire to really understand the impact of local business. Now, she was getting at some of those unquantifiable. There may be simply an issue that the council wants to, for other non-economic reasons, may have a lifestyle choice and support business. That's more of a value judgment we'll have to make. You're going to focus on concrete, verifiable, true economic multiplier effect, where you're going to trace out that how that dollar is spent more than once in a community. What's the current multiplier rate on average anyway?
Well, it's not as high as people think. In retail, it's, 1.2, basically. If you've got a proprietor business, you might bump that up a bit. I mean, the more value added in the business, then and the more productivity in the process, then usually the higher the multiplier. It also is dependent on having the support businesses. And part of what we do, not to get off on too much of a tangent, but just to think about what your opportunities are, and we didn't mention this, but part of our industrial market analysis is looking at clusters, because business is not just conducted in isolation. Businesses need supplies and inputs. They have customers. And
right.
The extent to which the region has that level of networking, then that it boosts the economic benefit. And you want to focus on businesses that build up that network of buyer-supplier relationships in the business community, because then you get more economic benefit. And the fiscal analysis translates that economic benefit into public revenue, so you can see specifically how city government benefits. And then we can also talk about how the workers benefit in terms of income and the businesses and so forth. But, yes, it's all expressed in dollar terms, basically.
And as you are aware of, one of our recent regional studies about last summer is with the Economic Vitality Corporation. We did a regional wine study with a nationally recognized firm. Came out pretty good, but they also helped identify some of those vertical integration opportunities. And I think what you're saying is, I think following up on Councilman Bayrou, you might help us look at a local, smaller-scale vertical integration. We've got
right.
Some small businesses. We found there may be some opportunities. How have you got experience being able to do that on a small scale?
Yes, absolutely.
And how would you go about helping us do that?
Let me give you an example again. We've had several opportunities for this in the Gold Country, where you've got the foothill counties on the western edge of the valley. They are connected to the San Joaquin and Stanislaus County major business centers. You've got Stockton, Modesto, and southern Sacramento County, where there is a lot of manufacturing occurring. But what's occurring in these smaller communities, to some degree there's a connection to Santa Barbara, and to some degree there's a connection to Monterey and Santa Cruz. But what we're looking for are opportunities for small-scale businesses that will fit this community, where their markets are visible in this region, where we can say to them, if you locate here, you can sell your products here, and it will feed into a larger value, what we call a value chain of manufacturing, which ultimately heads both north and south. It's one of your advantages here, is you're in a position where you can get both the tech market in Orange County and the tech market that's recovering in Santa Clara County, and work both angles. But it's that's how we do the cluster. That's what cluster analysis means to us. It's finding your niche in a broader regional chain of manufacturing and service development. And again, it's not all manufacturing. A lot of it is services related to enhancing the manufacturing process.
And last question. There's a piece of me that is a little concerned about this being a loss leader. And I think a number of folks have service components. You know, if we get all those deliverables you're talking about, you know, that would be pretty good. But there are a number of components when you get into the marketing and follow-up that you know, we've are real supporters of buying local. There's a lot of components that you've mentioned that we do have some folks that could provide services locally, and you know, I assume there's a way that we can break down a lot of these components, and maybe some of those might not be done with your firm. Might be, you know, you get into marketing, website development, this or that. We've got to do some modifications of some things. Are these fairly well scalable, and also components can be diversified from who is the provider?
Yeah, the action plan and the steps and the things that you want to do to move forward, those are going to be you know, well described. They're not esoteric things that only we do. So yes, absolutely, there would be ways to plug into the local business community to move the program forward.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Svensson. Well, in your presentation tonight, it seems that you have much more emphasis on the issue of tourism than I recall in the last presentation. And I'm curious if the issue is, from your perspective, looking at tourism short-term or long-term, as a short-term or long-term goal. Because with our economy right now, with oil prices, you know, hitting what is it? Perhaps going to be $4 a gallon here in the near future. That concerns me. And you know, tourism certainly is a terrific endeavor. But I'm wondering about the component of really trying to go after that retail commercial development. If you can address that.
Well, tourism is never the entire answer for any community. And again, not to belabor this, but in the Gold Country, they have tourism, but we're constantly working with them to diversify their economic. Proprietors of businesses that are in that area, they do quite well. The wine business generally does quite well. So there are components of tourism that are even good from a job quality standpoint, but taken as a whole, it's not. So there's a segment of your workforce and a segment of your business community that we think can benefit from we see additional potential here, and I guess that's why we focused on that a bit tonight, because we think there is more you can do to really develop that. And there are some fiscal benefits from it, because there's a lot of sales tax that comes from tourism activity. And if you're able to develop more lodging, there's a lot of revenue there that is a benefit to the city budget. But that aside, we recognize that one of your major goals is to create a more solid primary job base. And so that's by no means the whole picture. That's just an element that we think. So I would see it as a short-term opportunity because you've got some assets in place with the wine industry that you can move on right away. It's long-term in the sense of what I mentioned before, that it portrays your community in a way that is attractive to people and to businesses. So if this is a place that tourists want to come, it will also be a place that businesses want to come. So it's part of the image that you project, and if you do it in a positive way, it can be a long-term benefit to your economic development. So those are what I think the advantages would be. By no means would we want to suggest that that's your whole economy and certainly not the entire strategy that we would develop.
All right, thank you. Mayor Pro Tem Bayrou?
I thought up a couple more here. When you were reviewing some of your cities, you mentioned in Capitola that, you know, you had a transition of shopping centers. And what popped into my head was, you know, we have a lot of strip development along El Camino Real. So one of the suggestions might be changing the zoning to allow mixed use and trying to revitalize those areas. Is that
yes.
Get an idea that you have used in the past?
That's a strategy that has been successful in other communities. It's something we'd need to evaluate here. But those are the kinds of things that, I mean, this whole idea of outmoded strip retail centers is really critical and needs to be addressed. And that's one way it possibly can be.
Well, I know it's a concern. Some residents have come before the council and were concerned about all the vacancies we have in some of the strip malls because of other development. And so that's what popped in my head when you were talking about Capitola. And then the second question I have is about the household survey. You know, of course, one survey is not going to reach everybody. But in those situations, do you do some, like, advanced notification or publicity about it? Because, you know, if someone knows it's coming, they might be a little less likely to throw it away.
Absolutely. Thank you
very much.
Is that
a common practice you do? Or
that's absolutely part of the program. What we do is either the city council or the Chamber of Commerce or whoever's most appropriate, we send a letter out or we get publicity in the newspaper. We get the word out to the community that this is a survey that's going to benefit them because it's directed at building up the business community and creating shopping opportunities that they'd like to see and try to create some awareness so that when it does show up in their mailbox, cities and they qualify for what's called the State Community Development Block Grant Program where they have economic development funds available. That may or may not be an option for Atascadero, but we also have been successful getting funds through the Federal Economic Development Administration, EDA. And we also have done a lot of work with the U.S. Department of Agriculture. They have a rural development funding association, which for some of the things that you might be talking about, even though you may not, you know, you're obviously not a farming community, but the definition of rural may well apply to some of the wine or other agricultural activities that are feeding into things that you're trying to do. So there are sources out there. It's a matter of defining projects in a way that meet the criteria of that particular funding agency so that they feel that your project is along the lines of what that funding is intended to accomplish. And sometimes we have to be a little creative in how we describe what we're trying to accomplish. And a lot of times we have to put several different funding sources together to really complete the financing for a particular project. But that's the process, and we have staff available to help with that.
Okay, and the other question is, if we spend $100,000, what can we expect in return as a city?
As a city? Well, you will know that if you implement that plan, and we'll tell you what it will cost beyond the $100,000 to actually implement it, what those businesses will generate for the community in terms of long-term tax revenue, in terms of income for your residents, in terms of income for your business community. So you'll see in dollar terms a representation of what the return on that investment will be. That's in terms of the and again, it is a 3 to 5 year action plan. I think I just want to get on record that that is the appropriate time frame. But So there's all those products you get directly, but what you get more than that is a sense of where you're going and what you're going to get out of it when you have gone through that process.
And what I hear is that do you do a lot of follow-up? You know, I mean, after our $98,000 is spent, why?
Right. Yes. Well, that's it. We've all these communities that we talked about, we're still engaged with them to help them with pieces of the implementation fall into our sphere. And again, there will be other things that you'll need other people to help you with. We can help identify who, you know, would be the right folks to help with those things.
Thank you.
I had one other question. During your process, do you actually sit down with the council members and seek input? You heard my question earlier about the comment that was in that letter, and
in terms
my
of
not having ever had the opportunity to really sit down with any consultant and discuss some of my concerns and aspirations for this town. So I'm just curious, is that a component of
the first part of the public process that we always do is usually about 20 or 30 interviews. And so that will include you folks on council, it'll include business leaders, it'll include other community leaders, and we'll look to you to help us identify who we should be speaking with. But we sit down face-to-face individually with each person.
From council? Seeing none, we will ask the public if they would like to ask some specific questions reference this consulting firm. Mr. Ward?
Mr. Mayor, council members, and consultants. One comment and one recommendation. My comment, as a hard-headed ex-businessman who has hired a lot of consultants, a couple of months ago I came up here and I told you all the reasons why you shouldn't waste your money hiring a consultant. And you know what? I've changed my mind after listening to these guys. And I'll tell you why. They know their stuff, and they got a lot of experience. And it's the kind of experience that they can take and direct towards the particular problems we have in the city. And I think it would be money well spent. But I have one suggestion. It's going to take more than, I think, fancy branding sloganeering. I would hope in your household and business study that you will address the issue of why Atascadero, as it now sits as a city, has such a poor business-friendly reputation. Because I think to implement and really get the benefit of a study like this, this city has to be inviting for outside businesses, and outside businesses have to feel that those that are going to put money at risk can build a facility, not get jerked around in the planning process, not to have a year project drag on for 3 or 4 years. They have to feel that they can get that. I think the real estate community has to also feel that, and I would hope in your study that you will honestly and objectively address those issues and come up with some solid conclusions, because some of this is myth. I agree with you. There's been a lot of bad-mouthing, and a lot of it is just that. But there's got to be a few things there that need to be addressed. And if this group can address that, they are, believe me, they're worth three times that. And I hope you hire these guys, and I hope you have them address that one issue.
Thank you, Mr. Ward. Is there anyone else from the public that would like to comment? Then I'll give you both consulting firms, I'll give you an opportunity to answer that question if you would like. I don't know if that's within the scope of what you do, but you're certainly welcome.
Yes, let me just say that is directly a part of the SWOT analysis, where we're looking at the weaknesses and threats and opportunities for the community. It's what's the outside perception, but also what are the What does a business face when it comes to Atascadero and wants to do business? How do those processes work? Is that a strength or a weakness for the community? And so those are all the things that we will show up in that SWOT analysis as we
with someone down the road in San Luis Obispo or Santa Barbara up in Santa Cruz or down in L.A. or wherever they go. If someone's like, well, you know, what's going on in Atascadero? And they, if the first thing that comes out of their mouth is, you know, negative complaints regarding the community, then, you know, it's that word of mouth is really what most influences people's perceptions, not just individuals, but also business perceptions, because, you know, business people, they network all the time, you know, if whether it's through suppliers or through even competitors or whomever. And so, you know, really understanding at that level that the perceptions, whether the negative or positive, and how you can influence it on that level, I think is most key to altering perceptions of Atascadero. So,
thank you. Is there anyone else from the public that would like to comment? Seeing none, we'll. Oh, Mr. Shannon.
Jim Shannon, 8000 Coromar here in Atascadero. I got to take offense to him saying that the public is responsible for the perception of our city. I disagree with that wholeheartedly because if you just, for example, taking the Walmart issue, I mean, if you look at the Walmart issue, to how Atascadero is perceived, it's not the public that's given the bad rap to the city on that. It's part of what's been happening on our city council and stuff that's been said on the radio by different city council members. So when he says that, that's offensive to me as a citizen. And just as long as I'm up here, I'd like to comment that I hope Mr. Mayor tonight got to kick the tires, look under the hood, and check everything out, because it's pretty cut and dry about who the best consultant is here tonight, who presented themselves. And the city staff made a great decision a month and a half ago, and I hope that you follow through with what they suggested, because no offense to the gentleman from Texas, but I hope they can pack their bags and head back there tonight, because ADE deserves what they put in for a month and a half ago. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else from the public that would like to speak? Seeing none, we'll bring it back to the council. Councilman Member Luna.
I guess I'll go first. First of all, I think this was well worth doing. I disagree with Councilmember O'Malley that it's at least not my job to ratify everything that comes from staff. Even if there's a policy decision, I think in this case, it's especially important because next to the general plan, this is probably the most important planning document that we will have. And I think it's important that the public see the applications and be allowed to comment on them. And that's what the public was given that opportunity tonight. I think it's clear that ADE was the strongest application, and I will certainly support them. I would like to see the household survey put in.
I do think tonight that we did learn a lot of things that were good. So, while I don't agree with bringing them back for the second time and going through this again, I think we did experience some additional information, and I think that part was good. So, again, I appreciate the group from Texas coming, but I would have to agree that ADA, probably from a local standpoint of view, their business up and down the coast, Greenfield, so on and so forth, is a little closer to what we need, and I think they can do a great job.
Councilmember O'Malley.
Thank you. And again, I thank all the applicants for coming and those that participated in the whole process. I think we had 11 total. And again, I think this is a outstanding example where we get to see a little bit of what staff has done behind the scenes, because I think, you know, I had confidence in staff before, and this reaffirms my confidence in staff. I think they did a good job. I hope we don't have to review all of their work. I think it's good to do on occasion, and I think it was profitable to hear a little more detail. I think we would have heard that from this particular applicant at the next hearing, as they plan to do a couple if they're selected. And I apologize for my impatience, because I think, you know, for a long time we've as I've said, just listened, and I was going to support this last time because I felt there was some consensus to follow through on the plan, and I do think we've seen some plans that we can all agree to. So with that, I'd be prepared to make a motion if that's ready for some discussion on that.
I believe we still have a comment by Mayor Pro Tem Bayrou, and then I'd like to comment, and I think a motion might be in order.
Okay. I also want to thank the two applicants for coming tonight. And it was interesting to see that there is a different style in terms of how you approach the same problem or issue. And I really liked aspects of both of the consultants. I agree, staff did make the right decision. I'm very excited to get started. I think this whole process has been very educational for us as well as the public. And I'm glad to hear from the people who did speak that they have a little more buy-in. And that was really my concern last time when we decided to reconsider and have the applicants come back, is that we needed more buy-in from the community. And I think doing this tonight and spending some more time, and we actually got to know the consultants a little bit better, and they probably also got to learn a little bit more about our community through this process. So I think it was a good step. So thank you.
And I want to thank the representatives from both consulting firms. It was wonderful that you gave your presentations. They were excellent. And, you know, I want to point out that this really is not so much an issue of confidence in staff. This was an exercise in openness. It was an exercise, and you mentioned that you were prepared to make a motion. And if you're ready to do so, I'm ready to entertain that.
I move we adopt staff's original recommendation of accepting choosing Applied Development Economics to do our economic study.
But does that include the households?
Including the survey.
I'll second that.
We have a motion by Councilmember O'Malley, a second by Councilmember Luna. Roll call, please.
Councilmember O'Malley?
Yes.
Councilmember Luna?
Yes.
Councilmember Clay?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Bayrou?
Yes.
Mayor Brendler?
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
Mr. Mayor, I make a motion to go past 11.
Second.
Roll call, please.
Councilmember Clay?
Yes.
Councilmember O'Malley?
No.
Councilmember Luna?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Bayrou?
No.
Mayor Brendler?
No.
3-2, motion pass. Oh, I'm sorry, 2-3, motion doesn't pass. I'm sorry, it fails.
All right. Once again, I just want to thank the representatives of the consulting firms. You did an excellent job. For me, it was a coin toss, but thank you for being part of helping educate our public.